Yeah, well, he's not very good.
He sucks. He adds nothing to the telecast. Nothing. Zero. Let's have 40 people in the booth. What do you say? That was really good early in the game when they had the NASCAR guy on or whoever the hell it was. They like they had them all jammed in there, squeezed into the booth. Bah, 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 bah. And Joe Theismann, I don't give a crap if he's driving race cars. I wish he would drive it into the wall and kill himself.
Yeah.
Just shut him up already,
anything
will you?
To shut him up, please.
Jesus, he's just out of control. He thinks the whole telecast, we tune in to see about him. Not the game, you know, although, quite frankly. Waldenburg, Arkansas. Randy Wooten figured he'd get at least one vote in his bid for mayor of this town of 80 people, even if it was just his own vote. He did not. Now he has to decide whether to file a formal protest. Wooten got the news from his wife, Roxanne, who went to City Hall on Wednesday to see the election results. She saw my name with zero votes next to it. She came home and asked me if I voted for myself or not. I said I did, said Wooten, who's owner of a local bar. However, points of county results reported Wednesday showed incumbent William H. Wood with 18 votes, challenger Ronnie Chapman with 18 votes, and Wooten with the big zero. I had at least 8 or 9 people who said they voted for me, so something's wrong with this picture, Wooten said. Poinsett County Election Commissioner Jennaway Payne, Jennaway, said the issue had been discussed but no action taken yet. It's our understanding from talking with the Secretary of State's office that a court order would have to be obtained in order to open the machine and check the total, she said. The votes were cast on electronic voting machine, but paper ballots were available. How do you like that? He voted for himself and 8 or 9 of his buddies voted for him, and he got a big nothing, zippity-doo-dah. Not that there's any hanky-spanky goes on with election with machines, stuff like that.
Right.
Oh, we're back up on our we're streaming it again. We apologize to that if you just tuned in online. We're sorry, all 10 of you. We'd be sorry. And if you just checked in online with us, the good news is Drew Rosenhaus is going to be a regular Wednesday morning feature on our morning show, Kenny and Bo Morning Show, until it goes off the air in a few weeks. Here's the yesterday's poll result. What's your take on these polls? I mean, they're doing everything they can to sabotage them. They're sandbagging. I mean, is Kenny really that stupid or what? Seems like a decent guy, but he must be stupid.
Seems like a very nice guy.
Maybe he's been in radio too long. It affected his brain. I mean, they're just leading him down the garden path. Although he does sound very enthusiastic. He must be a good actor because he sounds very enthusiastic about, oh, Drew Rosenhaus, he's a monster. He's a jackass. 1,436 votes. What's your take on these polls we asked yesterday? They're fine. And that convinced me. We'll just continue plowing right ahead. Onward and upward, inward, outward, in and out. 1,075 votes for they're fine. Almost 75%. Once a week is good on the poll, 155. That's what George and I think, once a week. Once a month.
Sure. Once a year.
I hate this poll, 78, only 5.4%. That's not bad. The polls suck. They suck, 66. Get rid of them, 62. Not a really big negatory when you got 75% say, they're fine. What's the big simus already, huh? They don't even know what the hell that means. What's the simus with the polls? Oh, there's your girlfriend Hillary again.
Posted to re-election.
There she is. And today, who's the biggest phony of them all? 1,073 votes already. Our goal is 1,000. We got 1,073. I'm going back to bed. Let me know when your sales manager comes in response to that question we have.
Okay.
He just stonewalls. He's an evildoer. Just like Joshua said, there's nothing could be finer than to lose to Carolina, and they did last night, his Bucks, and this guy's a loser from Carolina. 1,073 votes. Who's the biggest phony of them all? And by the way, Joe Bell, we don't do any best of Neil tapes, okay? This week, next week, maybe George ought to tell that story about Roger Magelin.
Oh, I'd be happy to.
Hi, handsome. The biggest phony of them all. He would be good on a poll. And nobody
knows
as
a matter of fact.
Is. Yeah. Nobody would know who that is. He's a big phony. Big, tall, skinny phony. See, I liked Ranieri. I hated Roger, to be honest with you. Biggest phony of them all is Rush Limbaugh, and that's Pill Popping Rush. 443. Reverend Ted Haggard. Hey, Ted.
You fairy.
162. I wonder if we got that bit about Reverend Ted. Oh.
Come and listen to a story about a preacher named Ted, accused of taking nothing, having gay sex. And just when you thought he was a super righteous dude, out came some stories that sounded pretty crude.
Here's a fact that says, I listened online, there have been no breaks in the streaming since 9:57 a.m. when I tuned in. Sounds good. Thank you very much, Mystery Faxer, whoever you are. Maybe I was just getting some bad information on the website here, on my web page, where that red thing kept coming on. It kept saying, down, down, you're down, baby. You are down, is what it said. Didn't you see it?
I saw it.
Anyway, Limbaugh 443, Reverend Ted 162. Hey, Reverend Ted.
You fairy.
Who likes, he's got a good head on his shoulders. Dr. Phil 125, Bill O'Reilly 123, just wanted a massage is all he wanted. Wouldn't you call up a gay hustler if you wanted a massage? as opposed to like a licensed masseuse.
Well, maybe you would.
Bill O'Reilly, 123. Oprah, that's, she got my vote, 69. I hate that bitch. She is just... Jeb Bush, 67. Dog the Bounty Hunter.
About 30, man.
I know he's a crack-smoking phony. I hate this poll, only 28.5%. And Miss Mark Foley comes in last. I thought he was sponsoring all that legislation about internet harassment of kids and yada, yada, yada. I thought that was his bag, and then all of a sudden come to find out he was doing it. He's only got 27 votes. I guess he's old news now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mark Foley. Who the hell's Mark Foley? We got bigger fish to fry. We got a gay governor elect.
Gay.
Charlie Crist with a limp wrist. So anyway, that's our poll for today, and you like it or not. And we're streaming. Everything's fine. Although we do have that. I'm not getting involved, though. You're the one who keeps trying to get back to that crap about Drew Rosenhaus, Steve.
Oh, yeah.
Really frost my ass, man. Every time they keep announcing all these segments, that's Clarence again. Oh, let's have a regular segment every week. We'll have Ira Windbag on every Tuesday. Wednesday, it'll be Drew Rosenhaus. Every Thursday, we'll have some old fart like Larry Cokehead on there, like that, you know.
It's a freaking sports show.
Oh, Jesus. Anyway, they're doomed, man. I hate to say it. They seem like, you know, I mean, Bo, we already know, is a good guy. We like him a lot, although he's a dullard, but he's a good guy. He's, you know, he's obviously helping twist the arms because he's part of that sports fraternity. If it's not a sports show, there wouldn't be much point having him on there, would there? Anyway,
I'm talking to Josh.
I'm talking to myself. I don't know if I get an honest response from you because you talk up a storm before the show off the air, and then once we get on the air, it's like,
what did I say? What did I say?
Nothing.
Okay.
Didn't say nothing.
All right.
Oh, by the way, let me tell you about the Christmas party. The audience is invited. I'll give you the details in a minute.
All right.
If you're expecting guests this holiday season, then it's a great time to dial 1-800-MATTRESS to guarantee them a good sleep in your house. Plus, it's Dollar Mattress's 30th birthday. And to celebrate, Dollar Mattress and Simmons are offering you the lowest price of the year on the best-selling Simmons Beautyrest pillow top. You can choose from South Florida's biggest selection of Simmons Beautyrest and get same-day delivery, like always, like I've been doing for a long time. Call Dollar Mattress. This is one of the most pleasant, one of the most simple pieces of shopping that anybody can do. Even a moron can do it. Call Dollar Mattress toll-free. 1-800-MATTRESS for factory direct unbeatable prices and award-winning service, too, with no nonsense, no off-name brands, no BS. With Dollar Mattress, just choose the date and time for your new mattress delivery, 7 days a week from 8 in the morning till 10 p.m., even the same day that you call. Dollar Mattress delivers when it's convenient for you. That's one of the many reasons why they're ranked number one in customer satisfaction, why I've used them for years, and why everybody at QM now just about is using Dollar Mattress. So if the old mattress has had it, go online and check them out at mattress.com or make that one easy call. That's all it takes. 1-800-MATTRESS, 1-800-MATTRESS. Stands, that last S stands for sensational savings and stupid sales holes.
The sales biggest names of the best talent. Smart. This is Neil Rogers, Sports Radio 560 QAM.
Know that the Lord even loves Neil Rogers.
Your Federal Communications Commission, formerly comprised of broadcast engineers, but now your overlords of decency, is pleased to announce our new FCC morality queen. I mean chief. No, she's the queen. And the real church lady, Penny Nance.
This country was founded on good Christian values, which isn't true, but we say it was now. The Shield, cancel. Family Guy, cancel. Again. Rupert, you are hereby ordered to fill out additional airtime with pro-Bush propaganda. HBO, Showtime, Sinner Max, Stars of the... You're all off the air, to be replaced by the Trinity Network. Trinity, meaning the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. Not a ghost like Casper, but a real ghost. Oh, that reminds me, leave those stupid plumber guys on till they find the Holy Ghost. Not ghost like Boo, but the Holy Spirit himself. My white, blue-eyed Jesus. I want to cleanse his feet. Foot fetishes are hereby approved. We're burning books, too, starting with The Wizard of Oz. We Christians have always hated that book for the longest time now. Something about a gay prison or something, and as we'll have you believe, gay people caused 9/11. Although I did like Irreversible. Oh, Tenya. That! You're Jesus Vanilla.
I wonder if Jesus ever had wild diarrhea. What do you think? What are your thoughts on that? How do you feel about dessert? 10:18 at 560 WQM. Happy Tuesday, November 14. We got Mad Dog 2 to 4 this afternoon, a potpourri of sports stuff. We got the Power Hour with Hank and the Mad Dog together between 4 and 5. That's the hour that everybody in the world is talking about. Pop, 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 pop. They're talking about it. Hank Oldberg, a solo between 5 and 7. Hurricane warm-up at 7 o'clock. That should draw some fantastic audience. UM and Alcorn State at 7:30. College basketball, followed by the Eddie K. Show. How'd you like to follow that? I think we got problems. Well, we do. We got the Drew Rosenhaus. We got 1,100 and some votes already. 1,108. That's great, ain't it?
Yeah.
So I think we can just fold up our tent right now for today and take the rest of the day off. I'll go find a good machine, and you, you know.
Right, I'll go find a bag.
I had a line for that, but I better not say it.
I'll bet.
Here's a fax from Tracy in Kendall. She says, I'd like to suggest Nancy Grace for the poll. Have a great day. And P.S. Hi, George. You too, Tracy.
Good choice.
Nancy Grace.
Fran.
Thank you, Fran. Thank you, Fran. She's as phony as a $752 bill. Phony bitch.
She's as phony as her bleach
job. She is a sow. Disgusting sow. Anyway. According to the Iranian media yesterday, Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the only reason I read these stories about him is because I just like saying it.
Ahmadinejad.
Declared that Israel was destined to disappearance and destruction at a council meeting with Iranian ministers. The Western powers created the Zionist regime in order to expand the control of their area. The regime massacres Palestinians every day, he said, but since this regime is against nature, we will soon witness its disappearance and destruction, said Ahmadinejad. He's
Ahmadinejad.
A goofy guy who obviously needs a new wardrobe. So speaking of wardrobe, George tells me that Greg Reed is in the building dressed in a very expensive new suit.
His work clothes. I didn't say new.
Well,
as a matter of fact,
it
looks like one of the same old ones, but nevertheless.
I wonder who's paying for that.
Expensive, him?
1,116 votes. Man, the votes are pouring in on that poll today. Wow, I think they're scared after yesterday's poll that we might chop these polls off and they'll have to load it up with votes. You don't have to go crazy, you know. If you like the poll, fine. If not, just lay back. Just relax. So anyway, speaking of that WQM Christmas party, what kind of a date for a Christmas party is December 4th?
Early.
And not only that, there's a picture of a menorah on this memo, and a, I can't even make out what this is because it's a fax you sent me.
There's a Santa Claus and a stained glass window with, you know, baby Jesus,
Yoshi,
and Mary and Joseph.
Yoshi is on it?
That's right.
Oh, my.
And at the bottom, booze.
Oh, yeah, I see the booze at the bottom. That's what's going to attract Josh is going to be there for that, I'm sure. Free booze.
Damn right. Open bar.
The Power 96 QM Kiss Christmas Party, I'm not going to go into detail because then people will show up. You're not invited, okay? Remember I did that last year or the year before I was joking about it. I was going to tell people and Greg got all bent out of shape. Well, it's not open to the public. Screw you, Greg. Up yours. Proper dress required, so if I come down for the party, I'll wear a nice dress.
All right. Tutu?
No, not a tutu. I think Hank needs a big tutu. In fact, Hank needs a fofo is what he needs right now. A double wide. Did you talk to him about losing some weight? No.
No.
Well, I mean, how do you say that diplomatically?
Look, I already told you I lost three people. Talking to them didn't help.
Oh.
They got mad and died, anyway.
How about Fat Rich?
That was your job. No, I was already done talking to people about their weight by that time.
Yeah. I tried with him, too, and it didn't work. And I used to, at the track, I'd tell him, we don't want any rolls on the table because, you know, I'd get there early and
they'd just get mad at you and resent.
And I'd tell him to take the rolls off, and then he would reach back and take the thing of rolls off the table behind us before the other people would show up, and he'd start shoveling them down.
I'm sure he reached for rolls all the time.
Yeah. But he didn't have far to reach. CNN is reporting that Senator Mel Martin is one of the most unctuous subhuman pieces of terror to ever dropped on the earth. Has been picked by President Bush to head the Republican National Committee. Martin is a Cuban-born senator elected in 2004. He is staunchly conservative on most social issues, to say the least. The senator has been the target of an FEC investigation into the underreporting of campaign debt by $500,000 and another FEC complaint regarding improper solicitation of corporate donations. That's your Senator Mel Martinez, whose name ends in a Z, and that's the only reason he got elected is because he's a bigot and his name ends in a Z. His chief legal counsel resigned early last year after it became known that Martinez was responsible for the Terry Schiavo talking points circulated among Republicans. All that sinus about Terry and her. That was him behind all that crap. And, of course, what can I say? 1,129 votes on the poll. We got 760 friends on MySpace, on our MySpace page, which Josh says for an ancient, out-of-touch fag like me is pretty good.
That is good.
The online social networking phenomenon MySpace has come under fire for allowing death row inmates to maintain personal profiles on the hugely popular site. At least 30, prisoners awaiting execution in Texas have pages on MySpace, which is used by millions of teenagers around the world to socialize and make friends. Our 760 people are not teenagers. I don't think, I don't know if any of them are. I haven't checked all those things out. I don't think they are.
Some of them.
Are they?
Mm-hmm.
We have teenagers listening to this show?
Yes, you do.
Well, they must be interested in what's going on in the world, or maybe they just have a very sick sense of humor.
Both.
Both of the above?
Sure.
Groups working with crime victims have demanded that the website, MySpace, which is owned by Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation, removes these prisoners. The profiles list the inmates' hobbies and personalities, and some include blogs in which prisoners relate to daily doings on death row, their favorite music and films, or even the crimes they were convicted of. As prisoners are not allowed Internet access, the profiles are created and managed for them by friends and relatives who receive prisoners' updates in the form of letters. I think you ought to draw the line somewhere, said Andy Cahan, director of an office that works with crime victims. He has written to MySpace asking the site to reconsider having pages created and maintained for convicted criminals, especially murderers. You know, somewhere out there in the city, there's a murderer on the loose. Do the right thing. Turn yourselves in right now. Do it. Is it within your policy to allow that? I'm sorry. I can't. I'm going to have a breakdown from that show. I'm going to have a nervous breakdown. It's a good thing we're not playing those long, ponderous promos anymore, you know? No more promos for the homo.
Oh.
Is it within your policy to allow the glorification of killers by giving them a platform to influence young minds, Mr. Cahan wrote? Are there specific guidelines within MySpace that would prohibit giving convicted felons a platform for all the world to see? Question mark?
Uh-huh.
MySpace has yet to respond to his request. The profiles are similar to other pages on the site containing photos, many showing the inmates in their prison uniforms, and messages from their MySpace friends. One inmate, Randy Halpern, 29, who was involved in the death of a police officer, writes, I think I'm a pretty funny guy. I have a whack sense of humor. I can be a big kid at heart. I'm a hopeless, and I mean hopeless, romantic, he said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's hopeless. Somewhere out there, there's a, you know, hopeless murderer on the loose. Somewhere out there, somebody knows something. Oh, I will say this, if they went to UM, or they do go to UM, they don't know much. If that's where they're getting their education, and I use the term very loosely, they don't know too much. Believe me when I tell you. You believe me?
No.
You can't spell scum without UM. That Donna Shalali, boy, she's got a real sense of humor. 1,135 votes on the poll. Who's the biggest phony of them all? Rush Limbaugh, man, he's got this baby nailed. Nobody's going to touch pill popping Rush. 466 votes for Fat Ass Rush. Reverend Ted Haggard, 172. Dr. Phil, 131. Boy, I can't stand him. There's a lot of people I don't like lately, and that's not good. Media people, I mean, you know. People we see about on the news.
Why is that not good?
Well, it's very good. Dr. Phil, 132. You see, you have to feel something, and you know you're alive. Some kind of emotion, whether it's love or
hate, right,
or disgust or revulsion or nausea, like when you hear that Drew Rosenhaus is going to be on our station every Wednesday morning to help destroy that morning show. Drew Rosenhaus, my ass. Jesus, God. That's your fault. You didn't have a good enough talk with Kenny.
I didn't have a chance.
Dr. Phil, 132. Bill O'Reilly, 131. Oprah, 76. That fat bitch. Jeb Bush, fat ass Jeb, 70. Who am I to talk about fat? Oh, man, am I. Well, not good. Not good news. Miss Foley's up to 32, that hypocrite. Dog the Bounty Hunter is still stuck at
about 30, man.
That's only if they heard me read that story yesterday about his big crack problem and spending $2,000 a month on crack cocaine while he's chastising everybody else about doing drugs and this and that. All the people that tell you don't do this and don't do that, you want to know why? Because they're doing it.
That's right.
It's just like the Catholic Church, all this business about the gay pride parade, in which they canceled, by the
That's
way,
right.
in Jerusalem.
Did they?
They don't want you messing with those fags because they want the dibs, especially the good-looking ones, like the switch guard. Dog the Bounty Hunter, 30. I hate this poll, only 28, 2.4%. And Nancy Grace, we put her on air, and Nancy so far has got the, and richly deserved.
The biggest names, the best talent. This is Neil Thank Rogers, Sports Radio 560, QAM.
Howard David's a bitch.
Absolutely.
That's a pot. You can pinch it, you can drop it, you can squeeze it, you can blob it at the pot. Ooh, you can squirt it, you can stroke it, you can even roll and smoke it in the pot. You can sit and read the comics, you can scrub it, you can vomit at the pot. Well, let's go to the pot. Let's go to the pot.
All right.
Let's go to the pot. Let's go to the pot. Ah, let's go to the pot. Oh, you can take a tampon, keep a flush of tillers gone down at the pot, 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 pot. And you can dump your goldfish when they're dead and all sit down in the pot, 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 pot. You can lose the evidence when the cops are breaking in down at the pot, pot, pot. Well, let's go to the pot. 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 Let's go to the
pine. Let's go! Don't step on the end of this now. 10:32, 28 to 11 at 560 WQM. Happy Tuesday to you. I think, you know, we took this poll once before, but they hadn't really been on that long. It wasn't fair to Kenny and Bo to take a, you know, a survey on the morning show, how the audience likes it.
Okay.
But now they've been on for a while. And I'm thinking maybe for tomorrow we'll take a poll and ask them what their take is on the Kenny and Bo Morning Show with just one choice, way too much sports. I'm just thinking out loud. I'm not going to do that. But just something for me to think about because I get angry about it. I just get angrier and angrier and more pissed off. But nevertheless, we're doing okay.
Yeah.
Immigrants arrested in the U.S. may be held indefinitely on suspicion of terrorism and may not challenge their imprisonment in civilian courts, the Bush administration said yesterday, opening a new legal front in the fight over the rights of detainees, which, of course, the Bush people said they don't have any. They ain't got no rights. In court documents filed with the 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Richmond, Virginia, the Justice Department said a new anti-terrorism law being used to hold detainees in Gitmo also applies to foreigners captured and held in the U.S. Like, you know, if they just happen to get off a plane from, like, Amsterdam or somewhere like that.
Yeah, like tourists.
Ali Saleh Kalah Al-Mahri, a citizen of Qatar, was arrested in 2001 while studying in the USA. He's been labeled as an enemy combatant, a designation that, under a law signed last month, strips foreigners of the right to challenge their detention in federal courts. That law is being used to argue that the Gitmo cases... But Al-Mahri represents the first detainee inside the U.S. to come under the new law. Aliens normally have the right to contest their imprisonment, such as when they're arrested on immigration violations or for other crimes, like George is going to be very soon.
Right.
For being an illegal alien.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty stunning that any alien living in the U.S. can be denied this right, said Jonathan Hafetz, an attorney for Al-Mahri. It means any non-citizen, and there are millions of them, can be whisked off at night and be put in detention. Just kind of like disappear, you know. Just vanish into thin air. The new law says that enemy combatants will be tried before military commissions, not a civilian judge or jury, and establishes different rules of evidence in the cases. It also prohibits detainees from challenging their detention in civilian court. In a separate court filing in Washington yesterday, the Justice Department defended that law as constitutional and necessary. That's that Nazi, that little Alberto Villafave Gonzalez. He's probably doing something with Mel Martinez. Government attorney said foreign fighter, you know what I mean by doing something?
No, what? Yeah, explain it to me in detail.
Government attorney said foreign fighters arrested as part of an overseas military action have no constitutional rights and are being afforded more legal rights than ever. In its short filing in the Al-Mahri case, the Justice Department doesn't mention that Al-Mahri is being held at a military prison in South Carolina, a fact that his attorneys say affords him the same rights as anybody else being held in the USA. The Justice Department noted only that the new law applies to all enemy combatants, regardless of the location of the detention. The Bush administration maintains that Al-Mahri is an Al-Qaeda sleeper agent. The Defense Department ordered a review of Al-Mahri's status as an enemy combatant to be conducted if, as requested, the case is thrown out of court. Oh, boy. He's a sleeper agent, baby. He's a sleeper. I wonder if Woody Allen knows about that. Wasn't that his movie, Sleepers?
Yes, it was.
Didn't see it.
Two
remember
funny
Mr.
movies.
Peepers, though. It was funny?
Yeah, one of his two funny movies, if you ask me.
Now, can you believe that he did Match Point?
I do believe it. He's been guilty of making good movies in the past, despite the fact that he makes our
he's
skin crawl.
Yeah,
yeah, he's a nebbish.
1,177 votes. There's your anti-Semitism acting up again. That's
right.
What it is.
Mm-hmm.
If you thought he was like some... atheist. Oh, by the way, that was a pretty interesting thing they had there on City Confidential about Madeleine O'Hare and her retarded son. They're all still dead, by the way. They chopped them all up. Well, I used to have her on a lot back in the day. I bet you didn't even know that, did you?
Yeah, you told me.
Had her on a show. Actually, in the studio, we had like a widen the seat a little bit. Boy, she was a big, big old lady. She had the big pair, I'll tell you that. Not what you're thinking of either.
What am I thinking?
She had big balls, Madeleine.
I see.
She would read it. And, of course, on the phone. You know, here's a little piece of interesting trivia, which I'm sure you didn't know. The day I decided never to have any more guests on the show, it was a Saturday morning. That's right. I was working Monday through Saturday. And Saturday, I was doing middays at INZ, 10 to 2. And then Saturday morning. I do like, I forget when, but early. I don't know when. Maybe it was 10 to 2. And she was supposed to be my guest on the phone on that Saturday, whenever the hell it was, probably 87, 86, something like that. And I got an inspiration. I thought, you know, I've talked to her 80 million times already, and she's great. She was a great guest, you know, with a big mouth. But, well, what's the point? You know, guest, it's narrow casting again, just like this thing with Drew Rosenhaus. It just makes me very angry, you know? Makes me very, very angry because nobody will listen to me. What the hell could I possibly know? Narrow casting. Today we're going to talk about baseball cards. Anybody out there doesn't care about baseball cards, hey, we'll see you tomorrow maybe. Hopefully you'll come back. You know, like that. Like that.
Mm-hmm.
Remember Mr. Ego used to do those shows on baseball cards because he had his crap going. In fact, I remember one day he came to work late because he had a flat tire on his way back from the baseball card show. Remember that at IOD?
Nope.
Now, you weren't, wasn't he doing afternoons when you were on, or you weren't working yet?
Yeah, he was, but I was a rover, so I was not necessarily working on that show, you know.
You're right, roving
over media? Overnight, weekends, that kind of filling in for people.
Well, one day he did happen to show up a little bit late because he had a flat tire. Coming, of course, he could have been coming from home and had a flat tire, but he was coming from some baseball card show. You know, when you're working at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, that's not a good time to be showing up late. I can understand if you're doing a morning show, you know, you need to be in there like at 5:30 in the morning and you oversleep. I can understand that. Or if you're going to be doing a show that starts at 10 o'clock in the morning, like Marvin Rawman couldn't show up on time because he was always oversleeping, too. Another loser that you befriended. Who's the biggest phony of them all? 1,184 votes. Of course, I think you and he had only one thing in common. That was drugs. I think that's what or maybe you had something to go with those engines. I don't know. You never.
I made out like a
you
a bandit.
And Marvin and Depot.
Mm-hmm. That's
whatever happened with that? What was ever the upshot of that whole deal?
I don't know.
We don't know.
I know that,
what's the upshot
Depot
of the deal
settled.
With Chris Jones in sales that isn't responding to your little note that you left today? I think you made that up.
Actually, I left him a big note.
Well, drop a big load on his desk back there. Maybe that might wake him up. Oh, gee, there's something going on, yeah. Get a whiff of this, Chris. I think that's one of the reasons we're having so many problems with this whole new sales regime.
Good for Chris.
Yeah. 1,184 votes. Biggest phony of them all is Rush Limbaugh. Well, we already conceded to him the victory. He's got 494 votes. He's got almost 42% of all the votes, Rush. They hate you, Rush, you big, fat, pill-popping phony. You doctor shopping, pill-popping. Reverend Ted Haggard, 176. He just wanted a massage.
You fairy.
Yeah.
Dr. Phil, 135. Bill O'Reilly, 133. He's right on Dr. Phil's ass, and I'm sure it wouldn't be the first time. Oprah, 79. Talentless bitch. But she's going to save the world. I'm going to say it again. The fact that they had her speak in there yesterday at that tribute to Martin Luther King Jr., that was just, it was nauseating. Nauseating. Like, who the hell is she? She's some TV bimbo bitch. Oh, here's Oprah. She's like, you know, anybody that's got, like, one name. Be very nervous about people with, like, one name. You know what I mean?
Like
can
Madonna.
You think of anybody else?
Madonna.
Who? Yeah, Madonna. Be nervous about her adopting them black kids.
Cher.
Oh, I'd be real nervous about her. Jeb Bush, your fat-ass governor, 74. Total phony with a totally dysfunctional family. Helped fix that 2000 election. Jebby says we got it. Jebby says we got it. Mark Foley, she's got 33. She likes him young and hung. Dog the Bounty Hunter is stuck there on...
About 30, man.
What's that all about? I hate this poll 29, 2.4%. And I guess Tracy and Kendall must have... At least she voted for her choice that she faxed in. Nancy Grace. Solamente uno.
The biggest names, the best talent. This is Neil Rogers, Sports Radio 560 QAM.
Honey, Junior.
Grab my Junior, honey.
One pill makes you drowsy, my friend, and it also makes you high. And the ones my housemaid gave me, they made me itchy all the time. But go ask Wilma. Yeah, she'll keep you well supplied. Downing them goofballs and hillbilly heroin bring me to a higher astral plane. I can have a groove drug and not get busted. Thanks to my friends in a higher moral place. Go ask Wilma. She'll get you some horse and a handful of goofballs. I'm back my supplicants and ready to build those ovens to burn cheese in other dissenters' friends. Let's extract the gold out of their teeth and donate the proceeds to the RNC as a show of blind support for our glorious leader. And go ask Wilma. She'll get you through your show by putting logic out of proportion to justify your seething hate out my ass. I'm talking backwards, my little head friends.
Oh, damn, not look me, but yep, yeah.
Remember what Rush Limbaugh said. All drug abusers should be dead.
Okay, let's catch him off guard. Here's a call. QAM, hello. See, there's nobody on it.
Huh.
Well, I turned the monitor on just to make sure that there wasn't anybody calling. Don't want to take any chances.
See what this monitor looks like.
What do you mean by that?
Well, just all kinds of double and triple images that hasn't worked in a dog's age.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Are you starting again? Now, what was Chris Jones' response to your message, by the way? 13 before 11 at 560 WQM, the home of total indifference, man. We just don't care. How do you like that? We don't care. You got a problem with us? We don't care. Got a problem with life? We still don't care. Gay leaders on Thursday of last week canceled a parade. Here's the story I was looking for, and I found it. Canceled a parade in Jerusalem amid security concerns. Oh, wait a minute. Here's one for the poll. Jesse Jackson, without a doubt, the biggest phony, somebody says. Thank you, Tom. Put Jesse on there. Jesse and his love child.
We're doing it.
I played that again, but I just played it yesterday. Notice how I'm digging out a lot of old stuff here the last few days?
I did notice that. Well, great.
Well, between now and the end of the year, it's like, you know, it's nostalgia time. It's called living in the past. Oh, look at that. They're calling like crazy now. QAM. Oh, sorry, I'm not taking any more calls. What? In fact, I better reach over and shut that thing off. I did. Gay leaders last Thursday canceled the parade in Jerusalem amid security concerns and pressure from fundamentalist religious leaders who called such a public display in the holy city offensive. Offensive. Vias mir. The gay pride parade scheduled for last Friday drew opposition from Jews, Christians, and Muslims, while hundreds of ultra-Orthodox Jews vented their disapproval by clashing with police and burning trash bins in the streets several nights over the last week. The real Farbissen. Police had planned to post 9,000 officers to protest marchers, but authorities asked organizers to scale back the gathering amid reprisal threats after errant Israeli artillery shells killed 18 Palestinian civilians in Gaza on Wednesday. Another one of those oops deals. You know, oops. Here we go again. Oops. Organizers agreed last Thursday to turn the public parade into a rally held inside a closed stadium. The parade dispute has become a flashpoint in the battle for gay rights in Israel, drawing conflicting stances from secular society members and influential religious geckis, conservatives. Over time, we achieved a lot more than we expected and puts us in a very good place in the cultured world, said Uzi Evan, a nuclear scientist who was the first openly gay member of Israel's parliament. Now we're being dragged back into the dark world of religion, he said. And I would say he is
absolutely correct, sir.
Rabbi Yosef El-Nikava, a prominent religious leader, has said allowing the parade to proceed was surrendering to mental illness. Top Muslim leader said homosexuality is a crime and demanded police punish those involved in the parade. Christian evangelical groups in Jerusalem called the parade provocative and demanded the public venue be changed. Despite the reaction in Jerusalem, many cities have thriving gay scenes, and the Israeli military, an influential and respected institution, is banned from discriminating against gays. Homosexuals are drafted into the army for mandatory service and given the opportunity to progress up the ranks, up the ladder. They climb up the ladder and hopefully aren't looking straight up. Efforts by the gay community to win approval for same-sex marriage, a key issue in the U.S. and Europe, face a major obstacle in Israel's rabbinical authorities, who hold a monopoly over Jewish marriage and divorce. Secular groups have been fighting to get a law passed in Parliament permitting civil marriages. A place where geckis go. That's what Israel's all about. Geckis, fanatics. That's what we need to be. That's what they ought to be talking about, but not from even the so-called progressive Democrats. That's what nobody's talking about. They don't have the balls to do it. We're in a war against religious fanatics, not just against Islamo-fascists and Muslim this. We're against the religious nuts. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, but our nuts are the good ones.
Yeah, just ask me. I'll tell you. I know a few good nuts. How are we doing on the poll? We got 1,200 votes yet? Boy, that would be real. 1,219. Holy moly, rat man. Don't keep talking about the poll, then they won't vote on it. A California voter is told raw story, and it doesn't get much more raw than this. that she was verbally intimidated and physically assaulted by a poll inspector after asking that pro-life anti-abortion stickers outside a polling place be removed or covered. There were two cars parked in the driveway adjacent to the poll entrance which had anti-choice bumper stickers on the back windshield. When I opened the poll door, I told them it was a violation of election laws to have electioneering literature within 100 feet of the polling place, said Josanne Feathers, a civil engineer, elected member of the San Diego County Democratic Central Committee. The polling place, which has a La Mesa mailing address, is located in the unincorporated area of San Diego's East County, a region dominated by conservative Christians. See what I'm saying about crazy religionists again? Like that. We hate you people like poison, man, because hate is your game. That's the name of the game, is hate. Photos indicate the presence of stickers reading pro-choice. That's a lie. Babies don't choose to die. And every fourth baby dies from choice on a vehicle clearly parked beside the poll entrance. The California ballot included an initiative that would have required parental consent for minors to obtain an abortion. Andrew Kordowski, DDS, owner of the property and a poll inspector for the county of San Diego, moved one vehicle but declined to move the other, which had a flat tire. Oh, kind of like Mr. Ego on the way from that baseball card show. After Feather suggested that he cover the controversial sticker, she recalled, he went ballistic. He got in my face and started calling me a baby killer and said if I wanted the bumper stickers covered, cover them myself. Cover them with my fat ass, maybe. It doesn't say that, but I'm thinking that's what he's thinking. Asked whether he called Feathers a baby killer, Kordowski replied, of course, he is a baby killer. That's my First Amendment right. He maintained that Feathers should not have asked him to move his car, adding that when he refused to cover the stickers on the car with a flat tire, she started screaming. She went ballistic, like that. According to Feathers, Kordowski asked for her name and occupation and called her stupid. I never screamed. I told him this was an inappropriate conversation to have at the polling place. He told me to go to hell, she told Raw Story. Sounds like one of them good religious fundamentalist Christians, doesn't it? Go
sure,
to hell.
Sure, all full of love.
I replied that he was obviously not a religious man since he told me to go to hell. He reported I should burn in hell and get off his property immediately.
Go
he said
to
I
hell.
Was trespassing. At that point, he shoved me, pushing me backwards. After she insisted she had a right to vote in the polling place, Kordowski told her she couldn't enter his home and that he would let me vote outside, she added. Kordowski denies pushing or touching Feathers. He also denies that he tried to prevent her from entering the polling place. I didn't spend 8 years at the University of California in the medical, dental, biological field to be an idiot at my age of 74, said Kordowski, a retired dentist. He likes drilling them. But Robert Ito, a voter who witnessed the loud verbal exchange, confirmed that Kordowski initially refused to allow Feathers to vote. He told her to leave. That's what I felt was appalling. In fact, he pointed at her and said, you can't come into my house. Then he pointed to people behind her and said, you people can come in, and she can't. Kordowski got in her face and told Feathers, you can go to hell, recalled Ito, a Republican who owns a real estate development company. A third-generation Japanese-American whose father was a war hero during WWII, Ito said he respected Feathers for speaking out. I wonder if he's kin to Judge Ito. He respected Feathers for speaking out about something that I think is not legal, regardless of one's personal views on abortion. Ito didn't recall seeing Kordowski push Feathers. Asked if he would have felt intimidated by Kordowski's behavior, however, he said,
Absolutely.
Under California election code, intimidation of voters is a felony. Both Kordowski and Feathers recalled that a line of approximately a dozen voters waiting outside the poll witnessed the altercation and that the polling place opened 10 or 15 minutes late. During this whole time, no one had come to my defense, and a few people in line started heckling me as well, said Feathers, who called the Registrar of Voters office on her cell phone. They told me to call the police. Then a gentleman further behind me spoke up and said I had a right to vote. That was damn white of him, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, whatever color he was.
Ito urged that the polling place be opened. Inside, both Ito and Feathers noted that at least one voting machine was positioned so that the voters' privacy was not protected from onlookers. I would have felt uncomfortable, said Ito. It's like going into a bathroom that doesn't have any stalls. Well, I've been in some of those. Linda Miller at the registrar's office declined to provide names of other voters. It's kind of hard to drill glory holes, though, in Oakland.
I know. What do you do then?
Whatever you can. Feathers had planned to ask for a paper ballot because she mistrusted the Diebold electronic voting machines, but she noted, since I was afraid that Kordowski would destroy my paper ballot, I opted to use the touchscreen machine. She touched it. One of the approximately five touchscreens broke down when the first voter was using it. None of the machines had privacy screens. It was like sitting and going into a bathroom and didn't have any stalls. How'd you like to have a bathroom with no stalls there at QAM? Oh, my God.
No, thank you. I'll go across.
Wow. If it don't splatter, what's the matter? That's what Fat Boy used to say, you know? Oh, my God. What a place. What a place. And so Joe Bell says, hey, next time you come into town, are you going to come by and see us? And, you know, like that. 1,230 votes, 1,230. That's the W, what is that? Which one was that? 1,230. That was WJNO in West Palm. Was 1,230. Of course, now the cheap channel has moved them all over the dial. We got JNO and JNA and JNU and JEW and whatever, Jew Radio. So I have no idea. But that's what that was. 1,230 was WJNO. Isn't that great?
Okay.
And at nighttime, our signal was so good that you could almost hear it all the way across the lake, right across the street.
The biggest almost. Names, the best
not
talent.
Quite, though.
This is Neil Rogers, Sports Radio 560 QAM.
This is the Neil Rogers Show. This is your brain. Any questions?
I am me and she is she and she has no idea we're together. I see clear through a two-way mirror, I see her thighs. I'm spying. Sitting on a milk crate, hoping that the bugs don't come. Ladies wear department, taking off their garments. Man, I've been a bad employee, took my knickers down. I am a breast man, and I'm impressed, ma'am. They are enormous.
All right.
Look at those waiting for my thing to harden, looking towards a bus. If a prize, I'm gonna take my rubbers out before it starts to rain. I am a breast man. Take off your dress, ma'am. They are enormous. Look at the boobs, look at the boobs. Sexy texture, 12-ounce bouncers. Don't you think the stroke belongs for you? See how they heave like two bags of leaves with twisted ties. I'm rising. Stroke is interrupted. Jamming at the sink one eye. Lovely boss approaching, he will be encroaching on my fantasy if he arrives before I do. Precious suppressed man, I am a stressed man. I need a fall rush. Go dance the blue, go dance the blue.
I didn't understand a word in that bit, you know.
No,
1102. What?
That's probably just as well.
1102 at 560 WQM. Happy Tuesday to you. We got Mad Dog at 2, and then that Power Hour, and then the Humper 5 to 7, then Hurricane Warm Up. We got Hurricane Basketball. Now, is that game a home game, or is that at Alcorn State? You know, if you put a gun to my head, I couldn't tell you where Alcorn State is. I mean, I've heard of it, but where is Alcorn State, Josh?
I don't know. I would get shot in the head, too. But
yeah, if you put a gun to my head, you couldn't make me care.
Alcorn State. I'm Googling it. It's outside Lorman, Mississippi.
Oh.
And it's a treat to beat your feet on the Mississippi mud. That's what Clarence said. That's, wouldn't you think he'd be off to, is it a home game or what? We don't know. And we don't care. You think anybody else cares? I'll tell you one thing. You can't complain about the crowd at the Panthers-Capitals game last night, which the Panthers lost, by the way, 4-1. You can't complain about that crowd because there wasn't any. There was nobody there. I saw a little bit of that game. It was enough to make you, a grown man, cry. You want to sit down and put your head in your hand and just cry. Like in that bit I just played. Wasn't that what he was doing, putting his head in his hands and crying?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, here's the, now this is the article I wanted. This is it. And why did you let me read that other one?
I'm a bastard.
You are. James Carroll in the Boston Globe, War, Religion, and Gay Rights. It was on our website, so maybe 5 or 10 of you read it already, but probably not. He says, in Jerusalem, Muslims and Jews have found common cause attacking gay people. A gay pride parade was scheduled for Friday. In Palestinian areas, Muslim leaders vigorously condemned homosexuality as criminal, and in ultra-Orthodox neighborhoods, Jewish demonstrators staged raucous protests. Raucous! As a result, organizers canceled the parade. One of them said, now we're being dragged back into the dark world of religion, like I just read only moments ago. In U.S. elections last week, while a wave of change was reversing the nation's conservative direction, a counterwave crested, and it, too, attacked gays. On the ballot in 8 states were amendments defining marriage as between a man and a woman, a direct repudiation of the right of homosexual couples to marry. In 7 of those states, the amendment passed. One of those was Colorado, where a leader of the anti-gay marriage movement, Pastor Ted Haggard,
you fairy,
had the week before been forced out of his position and set up New Life Church in Colorado Springs because of an alleged relationship with a male prostitute, una prostituta. In his resignation letter, Haggard confessed, I'm a deceiver and a liar. There is a part of my life that is so repulsive and dark that I've been warring against it all my adult life.
Come and listen to a story about a preacher named Ted.
In Massachusetts, ahead of last week's Constitutional Convention, the Commonwealth's four Catholic bishops took a rare political initiative, calling on Catholics to pressure legislators to support an anti-gay marriage amendment here. The convention recessed without taking action, but the bishops had demonstrated the absolute priority of rolling back the rights of gays to marry. When public crises are defined by an immoral American war, universal cuts in social services, violence among young people, resurgent nuclear arsenals, rising global inequity, unprecedented jeopardy of the earth itself, why are the bishops obsessed with this particular question? Same-sex erotic love is not the issue. Humans, including Catholic bishops, have long accommodated it, but that accommodation assumes denial and shame. What brings demonstrators in the streets across cultures and what shows up in the U.S. as values politics mobilizing bishops is the movement to bring homosexuality out of the dark. When gay people openly assert their identities as such, whether through parades or through the demand for full and equal social recognition, reactionaries can't stand it. Why? Two answers, one personal and one political. The open affirmation of gay identity can pose a mortal threat to people whose own sexual identity is insecure. The Haggard story is a cautionary tale. As it happens, I was present last year to hear Pastor Ted preach a sermon at his megachurch, and it included a digressive attack on homosexuals that was as venomous as it was gratuitous. He equated gay sex with bestiality. Even at the time, I wondered about the dark energy of his hatred. That it is revealed now as self-hatred comes as no surprise. One needn't draw a direct line from Haggard's behavior to the private morality of Catholic bishops to sense that the Church's own deepening insecurity in all matters of sexuality, especially those surfaced by the still unresolved crisis of priestly sexual abuse of children, informs its exceptional opposition to gay rights. And so in Jerusalem, the insecurities of the male establishments whose dominance over women is threatened readily explode in contempt for any expression of gay pride. Patriarchy is at issue. There's a deflection here, and that points to the political use of gay bashing at the end of the Cold War, when the Pentagon defined itself as the world's largest closet by decreeing don't ask, don't tell. The issue of gays in the military was being used to deflect attention from the military's real problem, how to maintain Cold War levels of spending and a Cold War nuclear arsenal without a Cold War enemy. The real don't ask, don't tell was don't ask us about our budgets and nukes, and we won't tell you about the future wars they'll enable. All of the sturm and drang about gays in the military deflected American attention from the real issue of the moment, and it worked. The American Cold War ethos is still with us. The human race is undergoing a massive cultural mutation. The meaning of sexuality is being transformed as biology revolutionizes reproduction. Women are demanding equality across the globe. Men are being forced to reimagine their familial and social roles. Gays and lesbians are at the center of these changes. The refusal to be silent and invisible is one of the era's great resources, a magnificent sign of hope, he writes. How do you like that? If you grope, there's some hope. Or maybe some people just hope to grope. You know what I'm saying? Don't be a dope. Mm-hmm. Hope to grope. The man once dubbed America's mayor. Well, he just leaves me limp, you know? That's why I spend so much time limp. There are a lot of people who leave me limp.
Who?
Rudy Giuliani.
Rudy.
Has taken the first step toward becoming America's next president. You know how many chances he's got? Let me give you the answer. None. Former New York City, and that's because he's got no chance of getting the Republican nomination. No chance at all. Former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani, a Republican moderate who achieved near mythic popularity for his handling of the 9/11 attacks, nearly all of it based on BS, filed papers Friday in New York to create the Rudy Giuliani Presidential Exploratory Committee, Inc. A copy of the document was obtained by Associated Press. Creating an exploratory committee doesn't automatically make him a declared candidate, but it does mean he intends to travel the country, gauging support and preparing for a White House bid. Mayor Giuliani hasn't made a decision yet, Giuliani spokeswoman Sonny Mindell said in a statement last night. With the filing of this document, we have taken the necessary legal steps so an organization can be put into place and money can be raised to explore a possible presidential run in 2008. The GOP field is expected to grow with other presidential hopefuls. Of course, John McCain of Arizona and Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney, Senator Bill Fisk, that unctuous crook from Tennessee, Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee, and New York Governor George Pataki, who's got a personality like a dead man. Kind of like Greg Reed, dead man in a suit. You know what I'm saying?
Huh?
George, by the way, said Greg looked like a clown with that silly suit on.
No, I didn't.
Democratic Governor Tom Vilsack of Iowa has filed to establish a full-blown campaign committee and will make a more formal announcement of his candidacy later this month. Giuliani has said for months that he would wait till after the 2006 elections to decide whether to embark on a White House bid. The former mayor is a moderate who supports gun control, same-sex civil unions, embryonic stem cell research, and abortion rights. Stands that would put him at odds with the majority of GOP's conservative base. That's why he's got two chances of getting their nomination, none and much, 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 much less than none. I could be wrong about that, but nevertheless. We'll see. Got 2 years to wait now until the next big election. I mean, what do we do now, you know? Besides kill a bunch of people.
Well, if we're going to do that.
1,264 votes on the poll. The biggest phony of them all. Let's see. Nancy Grace is still on the bottom. She's got three. She's like trout on the bottom in the yogurt. Nancy Grace, 3. Jesse Jackson's on there only a few seconds. He's got 7 already. Boy, they sure don't like Jesse. And what kind of a stupid-ass movie, Lucky Number 11? What is that? Can you explain to me what that was?
What?
Lucky Number 11. What was that? Wasn't that the name of a movie in last year?
Yeah, I heard rumors that was good. Did you see it?
No. Well, no. If I seen it, would I be asking you?
I thought you were gonna rip it. I heard it was actually good.
Yeah, but I'm not ripping the movie. I have no idea whether it was good, bad, or indifferent. What a stupid name, though. Lucky Number 11. Well, what is that?
Never heard of it.
Get out of here. You never heard that?
Nope.
Okay, let's get back to the pool. Biggest phony of all is Rush, 520. Go ask Wilma. She'll tell you where to get the good crap. Reverend Ted Haggard, 188, self-hating queen. Dr. Phil, 146. Bill O'Reilly just hopped over Dr. Phil. 146 for Bill and 145 for Phil. Oprah's got 82, phony baloney bitch. Fat-ass Jeb Bush, 77. Mark Foley, 35. Not doing nearly as well as I expected. Dog the Bounty Hunter's tacked on a couple more votes, got 33. I hate this poll, only 29. Amir Tutu. Is that what you said before, Tutu? 2.2%. Jesse's got 7. Like I said, Nancy Grace, friend, she's only got 3. Nothing phony about her. She's as sincere as I'll get out. Don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. What is that all about? I mean, what kind
I don't know. She must
know
somebody.
What kind of people
watch
that bitch? I beg your pardon?
She must know somebody. She must have pictures or something.
She must be doing a lot of people, I'll tell you that, to be there on TV, right on your TV screen.
People with bad eyesight.
Now, is she on, what's on? I never watch CNN Headline News.
I don't know. She's on 14.
Preventing the flu by getting a flu shot, which we hope everyone has gotten by now. And if you haven't, the doses are coming.
The doses are coming. Maybe you'll get a dose before the year is out. It's only November 14. A lot of you folks are going to get a good dose before the year is out. Make no mistake. Oh, there's Ahmadinejad. I'll tell you one thing. Greg is a snappier dresser than him. That's about all I can say for him. So whatever happened with your note and Chris Jones in our sales department over that issue, you know, having to do with...
You are up to date.
All right.
Number one. The biggest names, the best talent.
In other words,
Neil Rogers, Sports Radio 560 QAM.
Don't know what it is, but it's moving.
Hi, I'm Aaron Summers, and you know what? You got me talking on the Passion Phone. Tell me the story about how you got... I got you down. Yeah. Holy cow. I'll tell you once more before I hang up the phone. I got you down. The lines are jammed up. Yeah, there isn't a doubt. Call up and tell me what it's all about. I got you down. Yeah. Holy cow. I'll tell you once more before I hang up the phone. I got you down. I got you down. I got you down. I got you down. I got you down.
Are you sure?
Here on the show, there's a new topic each night. Who'd you have sex with? Were they black or were they white? I got you down. Yeah. Holy cow. I'll tell you what's smart. Before I hang up the phone, I got you down.
Oh. 11:18 at 560, boys. A good thing I had that quick finger in there, you know, that one spot. Joyce might get all bent out of shape, but I didn't. She might get blown right off the air. 1,285 votes on the poll. We're going to have 1,300 votes on there in two shakes of a lamb's ass. So anyway, lucky number 11. Must be pretty damn good. 7.7 out of 10 on IMDb.
Wow.
That's a high number. Slick, fun, and very entertaining. The only thing I'm looking at, the people who are in it, Slevin, the star of the movie, is Josh Hartnett, who leaves me very limp. Bruce Willis, Lucy Liu, Morgan Freeman, Ben Kingsley plays the rabbi, Michael Rubenfield plays Yitzchak. Oh, boy. Plot outline, a case of mistaken identity lands Slevin, Josh Hartnett, in the middle of a war being plotted by two of the city's most rival crime bosses, the rabbi, Ben Kingsley, and the boss, Morgan Freeman. Slevin is under constant surveillance by relentless detective Burkowski, Stanley Tucci, as well as the infamous assassin Goodcat, played by the unctuous Bruce Willis, and finds himself having to hatch his own ingenious plot to get them before they get him. Ba-da-bee-ba-da-boo. Slick, fun, and very entertaining. A first review on here. 10 out of 10. How do you like that?
Wow.
Woo! Heavy duty. Trivia. Josh Hartnett lived with director Paul McGugin and his girlfriend in New York while the script was being written. McGugin said he thought of having Slevin wear a towel a lot of the time because he saw Hartnett in one so often, more so than a vulnerable quality to him.
Uh-huh.
I see.
And he can be Patrick McGugin?
So anyway, there's what that's all about. Lucky number Slevin. Good movie. Bad, bad title. Stupid. Slevin my ass. 1290 on the poll. Oil-consuming giants, the U.S. and China, along with oil-producing behemoth Saudi Arabia, rank among the world's worst countries in dealing with climate change, a new report says. All these reports, so many reports in so little time, you know what? Their dependence on fossil fuels, coupled with what some see as short-sighted energy policies, earned them the dubious distinction of placing at or near the bottom of a survey of 56 industrialized or industrializing nations, it said. The U.S., the world's leading polluter, ranked 53rd. In the annual study by German Watch, a German environmental group released on the sidelines of a UN climate change conference. Saudi Arabia placed dead last, while China fell from 29 on last year's list to 54th, according to the survey based on an evaluation of greenhouse gas emissions and climate policies. The U.S. has refused to accept mandatory cuts to the emissions blamed for the Earth's rising temperatures and is consistently rated poorly on environmental policy matters, according to the group, because it's bad for big business. Anything that's bad for big business, the U.S. don't want no part of. Screw you guys. Saudi Arabia, meanwhile, was chided for its poor national and international climate policy and energy inefficiency. Experts suggest that China, the world's number two polluter, tumbled so significantly because of its growing dependence on carbon-intensive electricity generation to fuel its exploding economy. At the upper end of the scale, seven European countries led by Sweden, Britain, and Denmark, respectively, and a trio of developing economies, Argentina, Brazil, and India, were deemed among the top ten. Others in the top ten were Malta, Germany, Hungary, and Switzerland, Schweiz, while France ranked number 12, leading the group to call for Europe to take the lead in global efforts to combat climate change. It is clear from the study of coalition of European countries and some of the large developing countries and those with leading environmental policy should take the helm of a coalition to build our future climate regime on, German Watch Policy Director Christopher Balls said. B-A-L-S. How would you say it? Balls.
Sure.
At the same time, he lamented that even the effort of the top scorers were not enough to effectively curb and reverse global warming. There is no winner, Balls said. The leader, Sweden, is the only one-eyed king among the blind. It's a one-eyed snake. The study looked at greenhouse gas emissions over the past year, over the past 5 years, and environmental and climate policies. Only countries that release more than 1% share of all greenhouse gas emissions in rapidly developing economies are targeted by the evaluation. So U.S. near the bottom, Sweden at the top. Now let's see, what was the movie I watched last night? Oh, it wasn't a movie, it was a story about, it's a true story. It was a movie, but it's a bad movie. The Return of, what the hell was it?
Dracula?
No. I'll tell you. One moment, please. I'll get it. The Return of Alex Kelly.
Who?
He was a rapist in Connecticut.
Oh.
It's a true story.
They brought him back?
He raped two chicks and a very wealthy family. And, of course, they sent him over to Europe, to first to Switzerland and then to Sweden, where he met some hot... she wasn't really very hot in the movie, anyway. met some blonde chick. And then finally the FBI tracked him down, and they brought him back to go on trial and yada, yada, yada. It was poorly done. I mean, it's a good story. It's a compelling story, but a weakly done movie. You don't need to see it. Return of Alex Kelly, okay?
All right.
Senator Jew Lieberman of Connecticut said yesterday that he will caucus with Senate Democrats in the new Congress, but he would not rule out switching to Republican caucus if he starts feeling uncomfortable among Democrats. How do you like that turncoat bastard? Yeah, that mumbling turncoat. Lieberman, a Democrat who won re-election as an independent, also said he wants to be called an independent Democrat. I got other things to call him, like Schmagegi Schlemiel, Schlemazel. No, he's got Mazel all right. Schmendrick. A strong backer of the Iraq War, Lieberman was returned to office on Election Day with strong GOP support. He ran as an independent after he lost the Democratic primary in August to Ned Lamont. I wonder if Ned is kin to... you were supposed to look that up yesterday, Lamont Cranston, the shadow.
Who?
Dave Lamont. He said on yesterday's, which I turned it off as soon as I saw him on there, that Nebbish, I turned it right off. He was on Eat the Press. That he would begin his new term as a Democrat because it would make him part of the congressional leadership. The senator is in line to become chairman of the Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee. Oy vey. I'm going to caucus with the Democrats, both because it's good for my constituents in Connecticut.
They're going to be nice to me.
He is such a whiny, wimpy piece of turd, man. He said that because voters returned him to Capitol Hill as an independent, I'm now an independent Democrat, capital I, capital D. Matter of fact, the Secretary of the Senate called my office and asked, how do you want to be identified? And he said, how about just schmuck would be good. With many Senate Democrats having campaigned to raise money for Lamont as the party's nominee, Lieberman acknowledged it might be a little awkward for him back in Washington, especially if they start feeding him trafe. They played by the traditional partisan political playbook, and I can't say I enjoyed it, but we're all grown-ups, we've got a job to do, and I'm going to do my best to get that job done, he said. Democrats will hold a 51-49 edge in the Senate, so Lieberman, the Democratic nominee for vice president in 2000, could find himself courted by the Republicans. He was asked about the possibility that he might switch caucuses if he became uncomfortable as Democrats sought to enforce party discipline, especially if the GOP offered to keep him as a committee chairman and respect his seniority. I'm not ruling it out, but I hope I don't get to that point. I must say, with all respect to the Republicans who supported me in Connecticut, nobody ever said we're doing this because we want you to swish over. Swish over like to the human race in his case. I don't think he's capable of doing that. Up yours, Jew Lieberman, you phony baloney. What a joke. Now, did you ever get a response on this situation?
No.
This seems to be par for the course, is that we just don't get any response from Chris Jones, the sales manager. So as a result, if he, you know, he asked me to do something in the future, or like any economist, going to say like that. I'm going to give him the same response that I get from him. Silence. Right? Don't you think that's a good idea? Tit for tat.
Okay, by me.
Sounds of silence. Go away, Chris. Don't go away mad. Just go away. You leave us all limp. We're limping along. So don't forget, we got, what's his name? Drew Rosenhaus is going to be a regular Wednesday morning feature on a morning show now. 26 past 11 at 560 WQM if you're expecting...
Thank you, baby!
The problem is all inside your head, she said to me. The answer is easy if you take it logically. I'd like to help you in your struggle to be free. There must be 50 ways to leave your lover. You just slip out the back, Jack. Make new plans, and you don't need to be coy, Roy. Just listen to me. Hop on the bus, Gus. You don't need to discuss much. Just drop off the key, Lee, and get yourself free.
Now let me ask you, is Stephen Hawking coming to the QM Christmas party? Because you have to feed him through a
cube.
Oh, that was bad.
Very bad. 11:31 at 560 WQM. How's Terry and her?
She's
still dead? Good. 1,311 votes on the poll, man. We got a real shot at 1,500 today. That would be a real feather in your crap. Too bad we don't have time for you to tell the story. Yeah, it was really scintillating. I was paying about halfway attention here. I was getting ready to do the show. George was rambling on about how Roger Magdalene was trying to get a job at IOD years ago, which is a true story. Real jerk. But the story about how he was rambling and ranting about those best of tapes. We don't do best of tapes, okay, Joe Bell? I'm just telling you that right now. No best of Neil. Especially now. I mean, here's some stories that were really hot news stories like 6 weeks ago. Like 6 months ago, How about Alien and the Pope? Let's play that one again.
All right. We have it.
But evidently Roger was in Now, where were he was standing outside the throne, and then the other throne was Boy Geary, the PD, which he wasn't aware of.
Right, he was, you know, he had gone in there to do a number one, and he was washing his hands and ranting with somebody who was standing next to him. There were two people in the stalls. And,
together?
Maybe, as far as I know. One of them was the person telling me the story, and the other person was our own Boy Geary.
Well, who was the person that told you the story?
I don't remember. One of our friends.
Oh, Jesus. Looking for a PlayStation 3 system? Better put your game face on. Prepare to be disappointed, writes Jacqueline Giovis at the Sun Sentinel. South Florida retailers are expecting droves of video game fanatics and parents at their stores late Thursday night, early Friday morning, in hopes of being among the lucky few who will take home the super high-tech console, nicknamed PS3. The Sony system will hit stores Friday after more than a year of marketing and hype. The launch kicks off a holiday season slugfest that pits three major video game rivals against one another. Against each other, I think, is the way it's supposed to be, Jacqueline. Not against one another, but nevertheless. Nintendo will unveil its Wii system. Oh, it sounds like something from Deliverance.
Wii.
The biggest product, spelled W-I-I, but it's pronounced Wii. The biggest product debut for the company in more than a decade. That's coming out on Sunday. Microsoft will also fight for consumer dollars with its Xbox 360, which launched last year and got a host of new games. The systems represent the next generation of video game consoles that appeal to different tastes and budgets for people with absolutely nothing going on in their lives. This holiday season, sales are likely to be a bellwether for the $10 billion industry and its players. For Brandon Hafler, an 11-year-old gaming enthusiast from Weston, there's only one clear winner this holiday, PS3. Brandon has persuaded his dad to camp out with him Thursday night at the Sawgrass Mills Best Buy in hopes of snagging one before the supply runs out Friday morning. Brandon has to attend Friday morning school, but his dad has agreed to wait in line to try to get him a system and a few games, which will ring up to about $750. Boy, what a dad, huh?
Mm-hmm.
I'll be tired at school the next day, but it's okay because it's worth it, Brandon said. No kidding around for this kid. He already owns a PS2, Xbox, three different Nintendo systems, two handheld players, and more than 80 games. He has researched all the systems online and in PC Magazine and passed up last year's launch of the Xbox 360 to wait for PS3. I really like games, Brandon said, and I really like getting the best system out there. Maybe put him on the phone with Miss Foley. He likes games, too. It's diehard fans like Brandon that are prompting electronics retailers Best Buy and Circuit City to open stores a couple of hours early Friday for the launch of PS3, which Sony has delayed twice. Serious gamers from across South Florida expected to head to the Best Buy store in Hialeah, one of only 18 stores in the chain that will be open at midnight. Oh, are you going to stop to Hialeah?
No, thank you.
We're expecting very limited quantities, said Eric Lopez, manager of the Best Buy in Hialeah, whose name ends in Z. Best Buy employees will begin handing out tickets at 11 p.m. Thursday to shoppers who have lined up at the store. Those with tickets are guaranteed a system, he said. Every day we have people asking, when's the launch date? How many are you going to have, Lopez said. All the gamers in South Florida are going to be coming to Hialeah to try to get their hands on it and the game, too. They want to get their hands on it in Hialeah. These are probably the same people who used to do the limbo rock at the Tea Room and J.C. Penney's in between drilling glory holes. Retailers said they didn't know how many consoles they'll receive for the weekend's PS3 and Wii launches, but everyone's predicting a quick sellout. Sony expects to have only 400,000 systems available in all of North America Friday. Already bidders on eBay have staked their claim on pre-ordered systems for more than $2,300, almost four times the system's top retail price. Two flavors of the sleek black or silver PS3 will debut, a $600 version with a 60-gigabyte hard drive, built-in wireless, and a Blu-ray player for high-definition video, and a version costing $100 less with a 20-gigabyte drive and fewer features. Nintendo, meanwhile, expects to have 4 million Wii consoles ready worldwide when the $250 product hits stores on Sunday. If you get a real small one, they call it like a Wii Wii.
Oh.
The system can't display high-definition video, and its storage and processing power are limited compared with the PS3 and Xbox 360, but Nintendo is hoping the system's innovative wireless controller, which tracks movements to mimic a football pass or the swing of a golf club, will attract new consumers in their 20s and 30s. Microsoft, burned by supply shortfalls of its Xbox 360 system last holiday season, is projecting it's going to sell 10 million by the end of the year. The Xbox 360 comes in two models costing $300 and $400, depending on the options. All three devices will succeed in the short term because of pent-up demand and lack of supply, said David Cole, president of market research for our firm DFC Intelligence. For players like Brandon, that could spell serious disappointment. If worse comes to worse, we have to wait a couple of months, Brandon said, as the family planned their buying strategy for Thursday night. I'm surprised you actually came into work today, you guys. It's Tuesday already.
Yeah.
I'd expect you to be sitting at home planning your market, your strategy, your buying strategy for Thursday night. It's only 2 days away.
Oh, yeah.
Mom and Dad smiled at their son's reluctant concession, already wary of his enthusiasm for camping out. But Brandon was quick to add, I don't want to even think about waiting a couple of months. Amen. We've all had those moments. You know, you look at something you want and you're thinking, I don't even want to think about waiting a couple of months. Haven't we all had those thoughts?
All the time, just this morning.
Right. Really? Not this kid. 1,321 votes on the poll already. It's only 11:37. It's only 11:37. Holy cow, man. I'm worn out physically and emotionally from that announcement about Drew Rosenhaus, Steinberg. When are we going to get Seth Greenberg back on here? When's he going to get his own segment again? That's what we really need to put us over the top,
hey,
don't you think?
Don't be surprised.
And, of course, don't forget Ira.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I thought Ira was on Wednesdays. Or is he, the season's going on right now. I'm sure of that.
Yeah.
He's definitely on. I just don't know when.
Well, you better start finding these things out. You're our liaison to that part of the segment, the sports segments. You're our go-between. You don't want to be our go-between with the sports segments?
Oh, I will be.
Oh, here's a good one. A good fact that says, is Drew Lieberman eligible for the poll on Fridays?
Right.
You bet. Get his ugly ass on there right away, his whiny, wimpy ass. Drew Lieberman. Got it?
Got it.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Dick or Dyke or whatever your name is. D-I. I don't know how you pronounce D-I-K. Don't worry about it.
Mm-mm.
22 till noon at 560 WQAM.
Chip Station.
Newt Gingrich does the hanky-panky. Newt Gingrich has a skanky-wanky.
Yes.
Newt Gingrich does the hanky-panky. Newt Gingrich does the hanky-panky. We thought he only spanked his monkey. They tease Bill Clinton about it all the time.
Yeah.
They call him womanizing low-life slime. But Newt's chasing girlies all around the desk. That's why his shirts are dug, his hair is a mess. Who would have thought, whoever would have thought that?
All right, here we go, on the desk, let's go.
Mr. Speaker, the committee would like to know, are those high-heel shoes sticking out from under your desk? I see. Okay, then, the committee sees no impropriety here, and there'll be no further investigation.
I saw him working on his pickup lines.
Okay.
You come here often, baby, what's your sign? A pretty young Republican and all alone. Hey, pretty baby, can I give you the phone? Who would have thought I never would have thought that?
Baby, and meet the junior speaker of the house.
Newt Gingrich does the hanky panky. Newt Gingrich does the hanky panky. Newt Gingrich has a hanky wanky. Newt Gingrich does the hanky panky. We thought he always spanked his monkey.
Oh. 11:45 at 560 WQM. Happy Tuesday to you. Interesting feature they got in the Palm Beach Post of all places. Isn't that kind of surprising that they have anything interesting?
I suppose.
I don't mean real interesting. I mean like mildly. It's called the Blog Squad.
Mm-hmm.
And it says a Brooklyn pizza from Domino's. Forget about it is what it says. Now, who wrote this? Whose blog is this from? See, I don't know. I can't tell. Does it really make a difference? No, we don't care. It just says, when I bit into Domino's latest innovation in pizza, the Brooklyn-style pie, I couldn't help but address the slice in my hands with a play on a famous political remark. I know New York pizza, I said, and Domino's, you know New York pizza. It's true, there's nothing vaguely New Yorkish about the Domino's pie, and by the way, since when is there a distinction between New York and Brooklyn pizza? To most Big Apple natives like myself, they're one and the same. That is correct. I never heard of Brooklyn pizza, do you?
No, but I had some of that product that they're advertising now.
And?
Worst pizza ever.
Huh. Yeah.
Ever.
I was curious to give Domino's a chance because of all the hype about the pie, it says. After I read the recent New York Times story about the chain's new pie, I became more curious. The Times so quickly dismissed it, I had to taste it for myself. Was the Times right, or was this just New York snobbery at its worst? Anybody with a brain knows that the best pizza in North America is in New York, in North America, not in the world. Not like in Italy, baby. Mmm.
I don't know. Chicago has pretty good pizza.
Let me say it again. If you like the thick Chicago-style pizza, which I do, only one slice weighs about 7 pounds.
Yeah.
That's the problem. You eat it with a fork. You don't eat New York-style pizza with a fork unless you're some kind of a wuss. Some kind of a, like the guy we had the story about the other day, some kind of a pussy. Anyway, the Times is right. It says, Domino's pie. I tried both the sausage and pepperoni versions. $30 with tax and tip for two standard-sized pies delivered to my home.
About 30, man.
Had the crust wrong for starters. In an effort to replicate the foldable New York crust, the chain is overcompensated and made a pie that borders texture-wise on the floppy. Maybe you can stick it in your computer, in your floppy disk.
Mm-hmm.
New York slices are designated to fit in the hand, but they aren't designed to droop. Oh, yeah, they shouldn't droop when you put it in your hand, and the pie either. It says, but it gets worse. The cheese on New York pies, mostly mozzarella, has a certain subtle flavor and pliability. With a Domino pie, all you taste is salt, and the cheese doesn't melt into the gooey strands I remember from my childhood. Oh, it's got to melt into gooey strands. See, here we go with the food again. Now, what attracted me to this? I don't eat no pizza. It's just bad for my blood sugar.
You hate Domino's, so you wanted to rip them, which is fine.
Why did you say that?
Because it's true.
Oh. It says, but the complaints don't stop there. How about an insipid tomato sauce with no hint of sweet ripe tomatoes? Or toppings that border on the cartoonish? The sausage is more like pork lumps, oddly misshapen and thoroughly unappetizing. The Times story noted that Domino's has already faced some controversy with its commercials for the pie, which play up every New York stereotype you can imagine. I wouldn't mind that so much if the pie was halfway decent. It says, trust me, it's not. You think it's pizza, but it's not.
I could have written a much shorter and better review.
Well, do you want to hear some of the comments?
Okay.
Here's one by Dan. He says, I tried the Domino's Brooklyn-style pizza. It's not bad for Domino's because Domino's has to be the worst franchise pizza around. Anyway, you have to go up north to get good pizza anyways. Not just New York either. The Midwest is good-tasting pizza also, which Josh just told us about that Chicago style. I still did like, even though it's been out of business for a long time, Shakey's. I know. That put,
who?
There was a Shakey's in Tampa on Dale Mabry, and there was a Shakey's in Kalamazoo. Don't remember Shakey's?
No.
A little on the salty side, but it's pretty good. Here's one by Fred. It says, the best pizza is the new chain in town, Vocelli. It's real close to New York pizza. Vocelli for the Palm Beach crowd. I don't think we have any Vocelli in Data Broad. I never heard of it, did you?
No.
V-O-C-E-L-L-I,
no.
Vocelli?
No.
Here's one that says, I'm on vacation in Nashville and caught the New York pizza craving. Also went to a Pizza Hut, requested a small cheese pizza with crisp crust. It ain't like New York out here either. What happened to the olive oil dripping everywhere? Well, first of all...
These people are alluding, they're deluding themselves, aren't they?
They're alluding and deluding, yeah. And they're doing deluded. Here's one that says, any pie you get down this part of the country only close to what real pies are up north, New York and Chicago pizza, because the water down here is not the same as the water up north. From biscuits to bagels to delicate French pastries, the water here sucks for bread, period. As far as the other ingredients you named on the two pies, what do you expect from Domino's anyway? A little sarcasm there.
Mm-hmm.
Caustic. Here's one that says, okay, pizza experts, the real deal down here in South Florida when it comes to pizza is Pasquale's in Coral Springs. A drive I know, well, not if you live in Coral Springs, but your taste buds will thank you. Are you familiar with Pasquale's, Josh, having lived in Coral Springs?
Yes, it's excellent.
Clean, no ash on the bottom, the crust, cheese and sauce to die for, a perfect pie. There's nothing like a perfect pie.
That's what I've always said.
Although I do like it if it's key lime pie.
I'd say it's no pizza time in Coral Springs, but I'd give it a second place.
Pizza time?
That's right.
No.
Time is up.
One by men from Italia.
How come no one remembers the Italian name for pizza, La Beats, it says? Only those who know that. What real good pizza? That's probably some dirty word, I don't know. Then here's one that says, Domino's sucks. All they did was cut the slices a bit bigger and use larger toppings. In fact, you shouldn't be eating pizzas, especially, and that's where I stopped printing this out, especially, I don't know.
See, compared to their regular pizza, which I consider to just be... pedestrian,
inedible,
but,
yeah.
But edible. I consider it
inedible,
edible, as opposed to some other chains that I don't want to mention.
They got a chain here called Pizza Pizza. It is so bad, it makes Domino's seem like Chateaubriand. Like,
anyway, this Brooklyn thing is the worst piece of slop, the worse than the cheapest.
Are you knocking
kind of
Domino's Brooklyn-style pizza? I guess they're not going to be advertising on the show then pretty soon, ain't it?
Worse than the cheapest.
By the way, Josh, cross out that,
pizza.
Third, that other one, that spot, you know what it is, in the 1 o'clock hour, cross it out.
Oh, okay.
Well, no, he's not responding, and I'm sure as hell there's no reason for me to be doing... I just don't do that. See, this guy thinks if he just ignores, I'll do whatever the hell they put on the log, and then I'll just, you know, they'll just fake their way through. You're a faker, baby. Dick Nixon was a Quaker, and you're a faker. And I'd like to have that shaker at the Shakey's. You know how they have in some places, like in good Italian restaurants, they have shakers with, like, not just Parmesan cheese, or somebody I know would say Parmesan, but also with, like, what do you call it?
What do you call it?
You know what I'm talking about.
Those pepper things?
Yeah, those pepper things, like grated peppers, you know. See, at least he knows what I'm talking about. George, who pretends to be a pizza connoisseur.
I do.
Well, that's what you're hocking. You're ripping out of this Brooklyn-style pizza. Go ahead. Well, what is it?
It's the worst piece of slop, worse than any frozen pizza you could get if it was rotten.
How about Totino's?
Totino's is better. Tombstone is better. They're not even using their regular pedestrian ingredients. They're using some Indonesian imported slop crap. It's wet, it's greasy, it's slimy, it tastes like crap. Other than that, it's great.
But the obvious question is, how do you like it?
Oh, I like it a lot.
1,363 votes on the poll. The biggest phony of them all. Nancy Grace has only got 5, and Julie Lieberman's already got her tied. How do you like that, Nancy? Fran, he's already got her tied. In knots. The 71-year-old pilot, remember we had that story yesterday about the guy who crashed his plane in your last town? See, in South Florida, it's not just ancient drivers who are driving automobiles who are a threat to your very existence. It's ancient pilots. The 71-year-old pilot who crashed that single-engine plane into the Art of a Home near Lantana Airport yesterday morning apparently had no valid pilot's license, federal authorities said.
I'm so shocked.
The FAA is investigating Alan Schultz's license, which appears not to be current. As it descended over a residential neighborhood southeast of the airport, the plane snapped several utility lines, slowing its impact. It crashed at 11:02 yesterday morning. The power line saved me and saved him, too, said Chris Gius, owner of the property at 6821 Pine Drive, south of Lantana Road that turned into an emergency landing strip. The plane came to rest against Gius Ford Taurus. Oh, Gius Taurus, which sustained only minor damage. I wonder if the Taurus had any Taurus. The fuselage appeared intact, but the wings were shredded, almost sheared off. No one on the ground was injured, thanks God. Schultz of Palm Beach Gardens was bleeding from a cut on his nose, but refused treatment at the scene. I'm doing okay, Schultz told reporters as he left the crash site with a friend. He declined to comment further. The NTSB and the FAA, which enforces pilot licensing regulations and plane registrations, are investigating the crash, agency officials be saying. Jones said Schultz applied for a plane registration in June 2004, but the application is still pending. It's still pending, baby. The plane is bending because the application is still pending. If he renewed his license within the past few days, that wouldn't show up in his record, she said. Questions about Schultz's license came up after he'd left the crash scene. The crash knocked out power to 46 homes until late yesterday afternoon. Florida Plunder and Loot plans today to replace a pole down by the plane. Gius and his wife Stephanie were at home when they heard a loud noise. I thought it was an earthquake, Gius said. I went out and he was already out of the plane. I told him to sit down. Power lines were all around the plane. I didn't know if they were hot. Christina Azadin lives next to the Giuses. The plane stripped off the top of her roof and chimney, and a wheel from the plane ended up in her basement on top of her Christmas ornament, she said. Oh, jeez. When it hit my bed, shook, Azadin said, this is crazy. It's my day off. I'm supposed to be sleeping all day. Neighbors Laura and Travis Strickland said planes fly so low as they approach Lantana Airport that their bed shakes. They fear some of their incidents will continue. Well, it's about time something made their bed shake. Just a joke, Laura. On January 22, 2004, a small plane crashed and burst into flames in the front yard of a home on Crest Drive, north of Lantana Road. The 79-year-old pilot and his daughter died. No one on the ground was hurt in that crash, but about 1,300 homes lost power. The 79-year-old pilot. Since 1982, 9 people have died in 5 aircraft crashes in the Lantana area, according to the NTSB. I wonder how many times it almost happened, Travis Strickman said. The threat is there. It's not a good place to live. Right by the airport, you know. They're coming down mighty low. Mm-hmm. Of course, they're 110 years old, and their vision ain't real good, you know, and the reflexes, all of these things. And stuff like that. Minor details, you know. So I'm really disappointed. I thought maybe I'd come on down and order one of them Brooklyn Domino pizzas.
Sure you did.
You believe me?
No.
Or come down for that Christmas party, the big holiday party, the Christmas Chinooka Kwanzaa party, whatever it is we're having, at that place that I'm not telling the audience because then they'll all show up there on December 4th at 6 p.m. Show up for cocktails, okay, and see if anybody lets you in. Just pick a place and see if you think that's where it's going to be. and show up and say, hey, there's Joe Bell, and there's Clarence over there, all passed out in the corner. And there's Drew Rosen, the horse. Speaking of horses, arse.
The biggest names, the best talent.
Welcome.
This is Neil Rogers.
I'm going to cry for hours about that announcement, by the way, all afternoon.
This is Mark Morgan. It's the 12 to 1 hour on QAM.
She only was 7 when she augured in. En route to more coverage for CNN.
Boy.
Ignoring the weather and storms to avoid. Her white trash butch mother said she died with joy.
I'm dying on the hand.
You're too young to fly. You're never, never, never gonna see nine. Now the white trash butch mother must live through her son. But he says that flying don't seem as much fun. Still she says you have to do it for me. Now help me set up my new widescreen TV.
All right.
Child pilot. Child pilot. You're too young to fly. You're never, never, never gonna see nine.
How's she doing, little Jessica? Still dead?
Yeah, she is.
I'll be damned. 1202 at 560 WQAM. Oh, she sure got a lot of publicity. She had her 15 seconds of fame. And Mommy and the whole Trailer Trash family. 1,386 votes on the poll. That's the good news. Boy, we are really kicking some big, fat, hairy ass. Sam Harris in Newsweek. This is short and sweet and to the point, but this is beautiful. A dissent. The case against faith. Religion does untold damage to our politics and atheists lament. That's the heading. Doesn't that sound titillating?
Sweet.
Tantalizing?
Mm-hmm.
Sam Harris says, and by the way, you probably wonder, who is Sam Harris? He's author of New York Times bestseller, Letter to a Christian Nation, and The End of Faith. He says, despite a full century of scientific insights attesting to the antiquity of life and the greater antiquity of the earth, more than half the American population believes that the entire cosmos was created 6,000 years ago. That is, incidentally, about 1,000 years after the Sumerians invented glue. Those with the power to elect presidents and congressmen, and many who themselves get elected, believe that dinosaurs lived two by two upon Noah's Ark, that light from distant galaxies was created en route to the Earth, and that the first members of our species were fashioned out of dirt and divine breath in a garden with a talking snake by the hand of an invisible god. This is embarrassing. But add to this comedy of false certainties the fact that 44% of Americans are confident that Jesus will return to Earth sometime in the next 50 years, and you'll glimpse the terrible liability of this sort of thinking. Given the most common interpretation of biblical prophecy, it's not an exaggeration to say that nearly half of the American population is eagerly anticipating the end of the world. It should be clear that this faith-based nihilism provides its adherents with absolutely no incentive to build a sustainable civilization economically, environmentally, or geopolitically. Some of these people are lunatics, of course, but they're not the lunatic fringe. We're talking about the explicit views of Christian ministers who have congregations numbering in the tens of thousands. These are some of the most influential, politically connected, and well-funded people in our society. It is, of course, taboo to criticize a person's religious beliefs. The problem, however, is that much of what people believe in the name of religion is intrinsically divisive, unreasonable, and incompatible with genuine morality. One of the worst things about religion is that it tends to separate questions of right and wrong from the living reality of human and animal suffering. Consequently, religious people will devote immense energy to so-called moral problems such as gay marriage, where no real suffering is at issue, and they'll happily contribute to the surplus of human misery if it serves their religious beliefs. A case in point, embryonic stem cell research is one of the most promising developments in the last century of medicine. It could offer therapeutic breakthroughs for every human ailment for the simple reason that stem cells can become any tissue in the human body, including diabetes, Parkinson's disease, severe burns, etc. In July, President Bush used his first veto to deny federal funding to this research. He did this on the basis of his religious faith. Like millions of other Americans, Bush believes that human life starts at the moment of conception. Specifically, he believes that there's a soul in every three-day-old human embryo, and the interest of one soul, the soul of a little girl with burns over 75% of her body, for instance, cannot trump the interest of another soul, even if that soul happens to live outside in the Petri dish. Here, as ever, religious dogmatism impedes genuine wisdom and compassion. A three-day-year-old human embryo is a collection of 150 cells called a blastocyst. There are, for the sake of comparison, more than 100,000 cells in the brain of a fly. The embryos that are destroyed in stem cell research don't have any brains or even neurons. Consequently, there's no reason to believe that they can suffer their destruction in any way at all. The truth is that Bush's unjustified religious beliefs about human soul are, at this very moment, prolonging the scarcely endurable misery of tens of millions of human beings. Given our status as a superpower, our material wealth, and our continuous advancements in our technology, it seems safe to say that the President of the U.S. has got more power and responsibility than any person in history. It's worth noting, therefore, that we've elected a president who seems to imagine that whenever he closes his eyes in the Oval Office, wondering whether to go to war or not to go to war, for instance, his intuitions have been vetted by the creator of the universe. Speaking to a small group of supporters in 99, Bush reportedly said, "I believe God wants me to be the president." Believing that God has delivered you into the presidency really seems to entail a belief that you can't make any catastrophic mistakes while in office. One question we might want to collectively ponder in the future, do we really want to hand the tiller of civilization to a person who thinks this way? Religion is the one area of our discourse in which people are systematically protected from the demand to give good evidence and valid arguments in defense of their strongly held beliefs. And yet these beliefs regularly determine what they live for and what they will die for, and all too often, what they will kill for. Consequently, we're living in a world in which millions of grown men and women can rationalize the violent sacrifice of their own children by recourse to fairy tales. We're living in a world in which millions of Muslims believe that there's nothing better than to be killed in defense of Islam. We're living in a world in which millions of Christians hope to soon be raptured into the stratosphere by Jesus so they can safely enjoy a sacred genocide that will inaugurate the end of human history. In a world brimming with increasingly destructive technology, our infatuation with religious myths now poses a tremendous danger, and it's not a danger for which more religious faith is a remedy. What a good short but sweet column from Newsweek, huh?
Very good.
Sam Harris. You go, Sam, you atheist bastard. I'll see you in hell. Oh, but we want to save your soul. Yeah, save this. Go save green stamps, okay? Schmuck. See if you can buy your pizza with green stamps. So I can't believe that you're so hostile now. So what pizza do you like?
There's two kinds, the chain kind and the go into a restaurant, real restaurant kind.
1,401 votes on a poll, by the way. We're going to do 15, old bean. Go ahead.
For example, Tony's. Don't get no better than that as far as I'm concerned.
It is very good, yeah.
And then right here, excellent. The crust is, like, nice and bready and chewy.
Are you sucking around for free lunch today? Is that what you're doing?
No, we already had our free breakfast from Howie's, thank you very much. Group of fingers
breakfast
and bacon.
Breakfast is one thing, but lunch is another thing.
No, one meal a day is good enough for us in here.
Yeah.
At least as far as freeloading goes. No, I'm just saying, if you ask me what good pizza is, it's Tony's.
Well, I would agree with you on that. It's good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
No good pizza here. Well, I'll take that back. There's a chain of restaurants called Il Fornello Italian Restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a pizza joint per se, but it's an Italian restaurant, which, like in Italy, your trattoria, some of them have like a pizza oven, wood-burning, you know, brick oven. And they make pizzas as well. But there they make the real thin. And anyway, this Il Fornello's got a really good pizza, like gourmet pizzas. And you can get it with different kinds of crust made from, like, spelt, which I don't even know what spelt is, some kind of wheat. I don't know what it is.
How's it spelt?
How's it smelt? Smells pretty good. At any rate, that's about... But, I mean, as far as pizza chains are concerned, and it's a good thing because I love pizza, you know me.
Right.
And I can't eat it. Of all the foods that I can possibly imagine, pizza, and everybody's different. I'm sure that all diabetics have different triggers for their, blood sugar rush. But for me, pizza sends my blood sugar skyrocketing, just zooming to the sky. So I can't eat it. Although I could order a whole pie and just take a fork and eat the toppings, you know. Larry Kent used to do that. Remember Larry Kent? Of course, he's dead now.
No.
Poor people are needlessly dying because drug companies and the governments of rich countries are blocking the developing world from obtaining affordable medicines, a report says today. But you remember many a time Ponytail or different people would bring in pizzas there and I would just eat the toppings with a fork?
And his is very good, too.
It is very good, in spite of the fact that we are not crazy about him anymore, but it's very good. Or is it the other way around? He's not crazy about us anymore? Well, too bad. That's Duff's fault. Just a joke, Mufti, whatever your name is, Mufti. 5 years to the day after the Doha Declaration, a groundbreaking deal to give poor countries access to cheap drugs was signed at the World Trade Organization. Oxfam says things are worse. The charity accuses the U.S., which champions the interests of its giant pharmaceutical companies, of bullying developing countries into not using the measures in the Doha Declaration in the EU by standing by and doing nothing. Doha technically allows poor countries to buy cheap copies of desperately needed drugs, but the U.S. is accused of trying to prevent countries such as Thailand and India, which have manufacturing capacity, making and selling cheap generic versions so as to preserve the monopolies of the drug giants. Rich countries have broken the spirit of the Doha Declaration, said Céline Chevrier, head of Oxfam's Make Trade Fair campaign. The declaration said the right things, but needed political action to work, and that hasn't happened. In fact, we've actually gone backwards. Many people are dying or suffering needlessly. They're saying,
I'm dying over here.
The Indian generics firms make most of the cheap drug cocktails that are now being rolled out to people with HIV in Africa and are keeping more than a million people alive. They brought the price of a basic three-drug cocktail down from $10,000 a year to less than $150. But new AIDS drugs will soon be needed because the virus will become resistant to the basic ones now in use, as has happened in the EU and the U.S., eh? These newer AIDS drugs, together with drugs for cancer and diabetes, are under patent. The Oxfam report points out that 4 million people were newly infected with HIV in 2005, and cancer and diabetes are expanding faster in developing countries than in the richer world. The report says that since the signing of the Doha Declaration, November 14, 2001, rich countries have failed to honor their promises. Their record ranges from apathy and inaction to dogged determination to undermine the declaration's spirit and intent. The U.S., at the behest of the pharmaceutical industry, is uniquely guilty of seeking ever higher levels of intellectual property protection in developing countries. The U.S. has pursued its own free trade agreements with developing countries, tying them into much tighter observance of patent rights than accepted and anticipated Doha. The U.S. has also pressured countries for greater patent protection through threats of trade sanctions, the report says. The drug firms are also fighting to have patents observed. Pfizer is challenging the Filipino government in a bid to extend its monopoly on Norvasc, a blood pressure drug. Novartis is engaged in litigation in India to enforce a patent for Glyvac, a cancer drug, which could save many lives if it were available at generic prices. And it goes on and on and on. The world is a business, Mr. Beale. That's a scene that you ought to have emblazoned in your brain, Josh, instead of going to sleep and falling, you know, in the middle of a great movie. When Ned Beatty is standing up there at the end of the boardroom of AT&T making one of the great speeches in movie history, and he wasn't even squealing like a pig. The world is a business, Mr. Beale. Am I right? Was that a great scene or what, George?
Yes, it was. And true.
And right on target. And way ahead of its time, too. Way ahead of its time. 1972, my God. 34 years ahead of its time. And like Howard Beale was saying about television. I don't want to recount. You know, I don't want to go through the whole thing again because then Josh gets upset because he hated that movie.
No, I did not.
Now, today, I'm sure that the audience will be sitting with bated breath on the edge of their seats waiting tomorrow for your review of Match Point. Tonight's the night.
Yeah, tonight's supposed to be the night.
How about the movie?
Rock solid.
Celebrity entitlement. And besides, I only had a lick and a schmear and a sliver of a slice of the pizza. I want your pizza. I'll take that pizza.
Trump 19, he ain't no pizza burglar, I'll tell you that right now. Or maybe he is, on the other hand, or was. 1,425
yeah.
Votes. We're going to go not just over 1,500, we're going to go way over 1,500. If I really want to be daring, I'd say, we got a shot at 16 today, but I'm not going to do that. Mark Foley had a shot at 16. Look what happened to him. Oh, speaking of that, Tampa. Oh, boy. I pity all you poor people who have either lived in or been in Tampa, like, for more than 5 minutes. Like, Josh used to live in Brandon right by that big mall and used to go to, like, Steak and Shake. Now, I'm sure they have steak. I mean, it's a silly question. Obviously, they have
every
Steak and Shake.
Fast, that's all there is there. Every the fast food joint.
I know that. That's on 60, right? Highway 60?
Yes.
Why does he say it like that?
Because I don't remember. You understand?
What do you mean you don't remember?
I just started driving.
Even George, who can't even afford the gas to drive to Tampa, even though he knows it's Highway 60 that goes across through those suburbs east of the city.
I do?
No. Tampa. A former police captain at a Veterans Medical Center has turned himself in after being indicted by a federal grand jury on child pornography charges.
Oh, my God.
Bruce Allen Scheller, 35, was released yesterday after posting $25,000 bail and agreeing not to have any contact with minors unless supervised. Scheller also resigned from his position at the James A. Haley VA Medical Center. He'd been on paid leave since July when the FBI notified the hospital of an investigation. Scheller knowingly possessed images and pictures of minors engaged in sexually explicit conduct, according to an indictment released last week. Arraignment should take place in the next 2 weeks. There appears to be none of the ancillary trouble spots associated with his conduct, said his attorney, Ralph Fernandez. There are no red flags or even yellow flags. Scheller faces a maximum penalty of 10 years in prison, a fine of $250,000. He didn't even get his 15 seconds of fame on that Dateline show on NBC. Probably PO'd about that. 1,430 votes on the poll. Boy, we are really... Although I will say this, Josh, I got some bad news for you. Uh-oh. I don't know what it is, because, you know, I mean, there must be somebody listening, evidently. Although maybe now that the election's over, they just don't care anymore. You think that's it?
Yeah, that's it.
See, on the election day, well, even then. But since the election, man, the reads on our stories on our website, way down. Way down. Way down yonder in New Orleans. I bet you got that by Freddie Cannon.
Oh, look.
I'm sure you do. Look at that. Yesterday, the highest read. Didn't even have a story with 300 reads yesterday. That's weak. That's like a weekend thing. And on a weekend, I assume because it was like a holiday weekend, you know, Veterans Day and the whole deal. Uh-oh.
Out of Miami, police are searching for a pair of armed robbery suspects. They crashed their vehicle in the middle of a busy intersection and fled on foot. A nearby school, Jackson Senior High, is in lockdown while the suspects remain on the loose. On Capitol Hill...
Oh, but now, just that's it. Going too fast now, Tony. Just cut the crap, you idiot.
What did I tell you, Freddie? Google Cannon. Good place for me. Not easy.
What, I nail that baby or what? Loud and distorted. Loud and distorted.
That's the copy I got.
Kind of like that.
You're free.
Like that. Loud and distorted. Nevertheless, Josh, I think maybe we're going to have to take a hiatus on these news stories.
Yeah, just simmer them down. I think people aren't reading them because there's too many.
No, wait, simmer them down? I didn't say nothing about simmer them down. I said a hiatus. What do you think, George?
I don't care.
They're just not reading them. I mean, yeah, I mean, for 100 or 200 people, it's worth going through all of this reading 600 websites. I mean, look at this. Cheney next on the chopping block. That's a good story. It's got 128 reads so far today. That's weak. Really weak, like Al Martino's voice.
Weak.
You know?
I think they're very important based on the look I'm getting from Josh. They're very, very important.
No, the money is very important. I'm not going to. Look, I wouldn't punish
Listen,
Cannon
I'm not sugarcoating
you know.
Anything. Of course, the checks are important.
Yeah.
That means the stories are important.
So, in other words, I got to work like an hour and a half, 2-3 hours every day to find all these stories to send you.
Let's go.
What?
Takes me an hour to put them up.
Yeah, but what am I making from it? Who's sending me a check?
Hey, you're proud to see the people are reading those stories.
Remember the reincarnation of Peter Proud?
Mm-hmm.
That was a good movie with Jennifer O'Neill and Michael Sarrazin.
It was all right.
Not a great movie, but it was okay. I like the fact that he was able to play tennis underwater. That was pretty good, right there at the end. Anyway, the widows of two combat veterans sued the government yesterday for not allowing Wiccan symbols on their husbands' tombs.
Good.
The U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs allows military families to choose any of 38 authorized headstone images. The list includes Buddhism, Islam, and Judaism, as well as those for smaller religions such as Sufism Reoriented. What the hell is that?
No one on me.
Ekyankar. And the Japanese faith of something which is chopped off again.
Shinto, I imagine.
But that's not what it says here. S-E-I-C-H something. The Wiccan pentacle, a five-pointed star surrounded by a circle, is not on the list. An omission that the widow says is unconstitutional. How do you like that?
Mm-hmm.
Unconstitutional. And not only that, but acceptable to them. The lawsuit was filed by Roberta Stewart, whose husband, Nevada National Guard Sergeant Patrick Stewart, was killed in combat in Afghanistan. Jerome Birenbaum is a Korea War veteran who died last year. Jerome Birenbaum. I mean, what kind of a name could that possibly be except...
Oy!
Wiccans worship the earth and believe they must give to the community. Some consider themselves white or good witches. Pagans or service members identify themselves as Wiccan. Oh, see, there's a thing missing.
I see.
It's too bad, because this is right up your alley. You're big into that Wiccan crap.
Well, I'm big into
Attorneys for Americans United, a group advocating separation of church and state, arguing legal papers makes no sense for soldiers to list their faith on dog tags. Wiccan organizations are allowed to hold services on military installations, and the Army chaplains do something, the attorney said. It's chopped off. I know if I knew how to print out a star, I know I wouldn't have this problem, but you know something that's more... It makes it more of a challenge that way and a lot more fun. It's just like, so what do we care if only 100 or 200 people are reading the stories? That means we got no audience left. But if we could just, you know, if we could just get some prefabricated segments on the show every day so the audience knew what to expect to tune in for.
We could start working on some of those.
That would be good. Like if we could just get Ira on this show. Wouldn't that be good?
Sure. We could do it.
Or some of those other great segments that they got. 1,440 votes on the poll. Yeah, I'm really depressed. I was depressed enough about somewhere out there there's a murderer loose. Yeah, I was depressed enough about that. That had me on the verge of suicide. But after hearing that they've got Drew in the Rosenhaus coming on every Wednesday, it's just stop with the segments, please. I'm begging you, stop. You're committing radio suicide. And of course they got nothing to say about it.
No, they don't.
They got no control over their own destiny. So, in other words, somebody's making damn sure that they fail. That's what it looks like to me. Looks like sabotage. And we're used to that. We got Joyce trying to sabotage this show. And, of course, Clarence. Uh-huh. Clarence.
I got Scrotovich.
All right. Your vote's automatically calculated by computers at the GOP. Manipulated this time. No, that's the...
As usual, I'm pretty perspicacious when it comes to these things. While the election's all over, it's like, okay, well, we don't want to read about this stuff no more. So we're shutting down our website as of 6 o'clock tonight. Not. Hey, listen, it's like the newspaper. You know, we're printing whether you buy the paper or not. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
We're putting out an edition. If you don't like it, hey, screw you. IAEA experts have found unexplained plutonium and enriched uranium traces in a nuclear waste facility in Iran... And I've asked Iran for an explanation, IAEA report said today. The report prepared for next week's meeting of the 35-nation IAEA also faulted Tehran for not cooperating with the agency's attempts to investigate suspicious aspects of Iran's nuclear program that have led to fears it might be interested in developing nuclear weapons. Whatever. You know what I'm saying? Just another excuse. Oh, let's go in there. We got to go get them now. Let's have Olmert, Ehud Olmert. Mm-hmm. Let's have him get the Israelis all whipped up into a frenzy again. Speaking of overt, a California couple are facing federal charges after they refused to stop overt sexual activity during a flight to Raleigh, North Carolina. Carl Warren Persing of Lakewood, California, and Dawn Elizabeth Sewell of Huntington Beach, California, are accused of interfering with flight crew members during a September 15th Southwest Airlines flight from L.A. with a stop in Phoenix. They face a December 11th trial date in U.S. District Court in Wilmington, North Carolina. Where did I get Delaware? Well, there is a Wilmington, Delaware, but this one's in North Carolina. Nothing could be finer than a court date in Carolina. Or as Josh's team would say, nothing could be finer than get pounded by Carolina, like they did last night. Oh, I'm sorry. According to court documents, flight attendants saw Persing and Sewell kissing, embracing, and acting in a manner that made other passengers uncomfortable while the plane was stopped in Phoenix. Persing was also observed kissing Sewell near her breast and was observed with his face pressed against her lower body.
How close to the breast was it?
The lower body was close to her. A flight attendant asked them to stop. They obeyed initially but resumed the behavior during the flight from Phoenix to Raleigh.
And then what happened?
When the flight attendant again requested them to stop, Persing allegedly told the flight attendant, I'm going to give you one warning to get out of my face. Persing and Sewell continued the verbal harassment after a flight attendant refused to serve Persing alcohol, according to court documents. Law enforcement officials were waiting for a couple when they arrived at Raleigh-Durham International Airport. Messages left by the AP for Persing and Sewell's attorneys not immediately returned. I can't imagine why. A little too much hanky-spanky on the plane, making the other passengers uncomfortable. Of course, we need to know what this couple looks like. Maybe they were making them, grossed out. Maybe they were really gruesome, you know. Or maybe they were real hot-looking and making the other passengers very horny. Maybe they were looking for a group grope. Who the hell knows what was going on, okay? All these people who get on an airplane, they think it's people like that. They're flying, going on vacation for like a weekend or something, and they take their life's possessions with them. People that just don't know what the hell it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
Clueless idiots. Kind of like the people running our sales department. You know, I was thinking about Scran during the break. I almost played that. And then I found that other. See, I'm trying to play stuff I haven't played in a very long time.
Yeah.
But I was going to play Scran. 766, by the way, now on our MySpace, 766 friends. Now, maybe some of them would like to do a little hanky-spanky, some of those 766. Not that I'm suggesting anything, but, you know, certainly can't do it on our website. 1,457 votes on the poll. Who's the biggest phony of them all? Rush Limbaugh, he's got this one licked, baby. 580. He's got 40% damn near. Reverend Ted Haggard, 219. Hey, Teddy boy.
You fairy.
Nancy boy. I mean, Teddy boy. Bill O'Reilly, 170. Dr. Phil, 162. That's the real battle for turd. Oprah's got 86. She ought to be. Fat Ass Jeb Bush has got 80. Dog the Bounty Hunter, the crack snorting, whatever he is. Dog the Bounty Hunter, 40. Mark Foley, she's got 38. I hate this poll, 34, 2.3%. Jesse Jackson, 29, with his love child. Jewel Lieberman, 11, and Nancy Grace, she's only got 8, Fran. I wonder if she's got a MySpace page, Nancy Grace. Maybe she'd find out she didn't have as many friends.
I don't know. We could find out.
We could? How do you do that?
You go on the MySpace and do a little search.
Oh, no. I bet she's got lots of friends. But she's on TV, dummy. She's all over the world like some kind of a disease. Her testicles and tentacles are just grabbing all over the entire globe like a big, gigantic octopus.
I was thinking squid, but...
Yeah, octopus. 22 till 1. Guess what's coming on Friday? It's already Tuesday. Friday we got Jackson's. We got all screwed up last week because you were a little, eager in anticipation. Or because maybe I'm stupid and misunderstood what Duff language
was
speaking.
Well, we all did.
Oh, she's got a MySpace, all right.
She does?
Oh, yeah. Yes, she does.
I'm on it now, too.
How many friends you got? About 2 million?
479.
What a piker.
479?
Yeah.
We have 766, and Nancy Grace, who's on television all around the world on the satellite,
right.
She's got 400 and what?
And she's probably had that page up way longer than you have.
Oh, she's had it up longer than I have.
I'll bet.
And the page, too. Miss Foley's had the page up for a long time.
People are ice holes.
Bitch, I bang tonight. I'll smack your head and bruise up your body the way you like. Screw it. You get my mojo long and strong. Give charity money to OJ and don't care if it's wrong. You blonde and you white. You just be my time, the kind of bitch we like. You know how to do it right. You got a date with OJ tonight. Yo.
12:45. I told you I was going to play Screw Randy. You didn't believe me, did you?
I didn't doubt you for a second.
1,474 votes. I'm thinking to myself, that OJ golf tournament, that was like the turning point. That was the beginning of the end. Greg, it's a suit. It's a lawsuit, Greg. There was Duff in the hallway like a little girl. Why not crying and moaning? At any rate, it just epitomizes the entire operation from top to bottom. So how's Chris Jones coming? Did he respond to your little note?
No.
No. It's too bad we already crossed that spot out. The Church of England has broken with traditional dogma by calling for doctors to be allowed to let sick newborn babies die.
Oh, my God.
The Church of England, how do you like that?
C of E.
Christians have long argued that life should be preserved at all costs, but a bishop representing the National Church has now sparked controversy by arguing that there are occasions when it's compassionate to leave a severely disabled child to die. And the bishop of I'm thinking that if they let all the Brit babies die, that would not be a bad idea. Of course, they should have started that a long time ago. The world would be in much better shape today, but nevertheless. And the Bishop of Southwark, Tom Butler, who's the Vice Chair of the Church of England's Mission and Public Affairs Council, has also argued that the high financial cost of keeping desperately ill babies alive should be a factor in life or death decisions. You know what that grips was, don't you? It's because I'm getting Jones in for pizza now. It's your fault. Although I found a story about the Palm Beach blog. Well, I did. I brought it up, and then you started hawking about how bad it is and the book and this. And
it's awful. Worst pizza ever.
Really?
Yes.
The shocking new policy from the church has caused outrage among the disabled. A spokeswoman for the UK Disabled People's Council, which represents tens of thousands of members in 150 different organizations, said, "How can the Church of England say that Christian compassion includes the killing of disabled babies, either through the withdrawing or withholding of treatment or by act of euthanasia?" There's a lot of euthanasia, man. Billions of them.
Sure.
It's not for doctors or indeed anyone else to determine whether a baby's life is worthwhile simply on the grounds of impairment or health condition, they say. The church's surprise call comes just a week after the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynecology sparked fury by calling for a debate on the mercy killing of disabled infants. Yeah, why didn't that what's-her-name just have an abortion in that movie? She wouldn't have it.
She wouldn't.
I know. Should have, though, bitch.
Happens all the time.
But it's been made in a carefully thought-out official Church of England. It's been made in a carefully thought-out official Church of England paper written by Bishop Butler for a public inquiry into the ethical issues surrounding the care of long, premature, or desperately ill newborn babies. The inquiry by the Newfield Council on Bioethics began 2 years ago, and its findings are due to be published in London, but the Church's contribution to the debate has been leaked in advance. They're leaking over there. Just like in Amsterdam, where they leak out there. You didn't believe me about that, where they have, like, outdoor toilets?
Why not? They've had them in France for years, and I assume other parts of Europe.
They have?
I see them in the movies. I've heard tales.
You don't have them in Germany, I'll tell you that. You don't pee outside in Germany, only in Amsterdam. Oh, well, they're drinking so much beer there all the time, you know, all over in Germany. See, one thing about most of the European countries is they're all a bunch of drunks. They start drinking beer like for breakfast, like 9, 10 o'clock in the morning. They really do. Anyway, the Newfield Council, in practice, doing so can be controversial within the three-month premature Charlotte Wyatt, a case in point. The Portsmouth baby weighed just 1 pound at birth, had severe brain and lung damage. Doctors wanted to be allowed to leave her die, but her parents successfully campaigned through the courts against them. Now that the child is three, however, and cannot be cared for at home, her parents have separated and are considered unsuitable to look after. In future cases, doctors may work to guidelines proposed by the Newfielding Inquiry. In the Church of England's contribution to the inquiry, Bishop Butler wrote, it may in some circumstances be right to choose or withhold or withdraw treatment, knowing it will possibly, probably, even certainly result in death. The church stressed that it was not saying some lives weren't worth living, but said there were strong proportionate reasons for overriding the presupposition that life should be maintained. Well, how about that? So how does that jive in with all these fetus huggers, huh? If they're going to off babies who are born defective, whatever, you know, oh, this one didn't turn out too good. Yeah. Let's kill it.
Well, that's the devil-worshipping church
of
England.
It's like in India where they, baby girls. So we don't want no more women.
Mm-mm.
To hell with that.
Sounds pretty gay.
They got a really
good
dowry. Yeah. 1479 on a poll. Boy, I thought we'd have 1500. See how it's like tailed right off?
Mm-hmm.
Just like the stories on the website. I'm gonna cut down on those. There are too many of them. After today. I've already saved like 100 for tomorrow. After today. Well, tonight you got that Match Point to watch.
Yes, I do.
With Scarlett Johansson and Jonathan Rhys-Meyers. It's good.
The ending, finally,
there aren't too many movies that we've talked about that have really excellent endings. Now, like, what's that movie I like a lot?
Magnolia?
With, Sigourney Weaver. I beg your pardon?
Oh, Imaginary Heroes.
Imaginary Heroes. Now, that movie, that ending was fine.
It was fine.
It was corny, it wasn't but like, I mean, it was just
surprising.
Fine.
Surprising.
You know?
It wasn't like a gangbuster ending, but it didn't piss you off.
Right. I mean, the ending in Match Point was better, but never
right.
A different kind of movie.
It was a nice surprise, you know, and that's what you want.
What was a nice surprise in Imaginary Heroes?
No, Match Point.
Oh. President Bush's power to shape the federal judiciary is coming to an end. To which we say,
all right.
The Democrats' takeover of the Senate in January means that they'll be able to deny consideration to nominees whose views they oppose on issues such as abortion. Speak of the devil. While Republicans will still control the lame duck Senate session convening this week, there's little chance of action on many judgeships. The Bush presidency is over with regard to judges, said Manuel Miranda, former Senate Republican aide who heads the Washington-based Third Branch Conference, which pushes for conservative judicial nominees. The best Republicans can hope for is that block judgeships will be an issue in the 2008 presidential election, Miranda said. There are 16 appeals court vacancies now, more probably developed during Bush's remaining 2 years in office. In Bill Clinton's last 2 years in office, a Republican-controlled Senate shelved 16 appeals court nominees, preserving the vacancies for Bush to fill. With a Republican-controlled Senate, Bush put Chief Justice John Roberts and Justice Sam Alito on the Supreme Court and appointed 46 of the 179 judges on the nation's 13 federal appeals courts. Democratic control of the Senate limits Bush's options filling any Supreme Court vacancy that might develop before he leaves office. A nominee such as Alito, who drew the support of just 4 Democratic senators, would probably fail to win confirmation. While half of the Senate's 44 Democrats voted for Roberts last year, many have expressed reservations since observing his performance on the High Court, said Jeff Peck. Didn't they sing about him in that song, I Love You, a Bushel and a Peck?
Oh.
That was Gregory Peck. Said Jeff Peck, a Washington lobbyist and former Democratic counsel to the Senate Judiciary Committee. How much is a peck?
This much. Here.
$5? The benefit of doubt is diminished for any future Supreme Court nominee, he said. Bush is being urged by Senate Democrats to seek consensus on judicial nominees. Don't send us political extremists, Dick Durbin of Illinois said after the election. I think that time is past. Meanwhile, Republican activists say Bush should push for strongly ideological candidates even if they don't win confirmation. Such a strategy might force newly elected Democratic senators such as Bob Casey of Pennsylvania, Claire McCaskill of Missouri, Jim Webb of Virginia, and John Tester of Montana to be put to the test, said Sean Rushton, executive director of the Committee for Justice, a Washington advocacy group that has worked to support Bush's unctuous right-wing judicial nominees. Senate Democrats Ken Salazar of Colorado, Ben Nelson of Nebraska, Tim Johnson of South Dakota, Kent Conrad of North Dakota, and David Pryor of Arkansas have sometimes shown a willingness to break ranks with their party over judges. These Democrats, like McCaskill, Webb, and Tester, represent states that Bush carried in the 2004 presidential election. One sign of how confrontational Bush wants to be is whether he will ask the lame duck Senate to reconsider five nominations that were stalled before Congress left town in September. They include Terrence Boyle, a federal district judge in North Carolina, nominated to the appeals court in Richmond, Virginia, who's opposed by Democrats who say he's shown hostility to claims of racial discrimination and environmental abuse. William Haynes the Tooth, the Defense Department's general counsel, who Democrats, along with South Carolina Republican Lindsey Graham, say may have helped craft a policy for interrogating a suspected terrorist that justified torture. And William Myers III, a mining industry lobbyist, nominated to a San Francisco-based court, who Democrats say is hostile to environmental regulation. New York Senator Chuck Schumer, who led the Democrats' campaign to win control of the Senate, said resubmitting the names would lead to more partisanship and political combat. We're asking the president, now that we're in the majority, to do what he hasn't done before, which is consult with us, Chucky Boy said. How do you like that? Consult with us.
All right.
Not just your right-wing goofballs, okay? Not just your Nazi buddies. Not just your bunk-butt Nazi fag closet buddies. 1488 on the poll. We had a shot there, I think, at 1600, if I would have really pushed. But then I got kind of like all, you know, wimped out because I'm looking at the reads there on those stories. What difference does it make when you come right down to it, huh? When Josh works his ass off to put those on there, do you think he cares whether 10 people or 10,000 people read it? Do you care? As long as that check comes through,
that's
every
right.
now and then?
I just care about the check, man.
See, now we're getting a little honesty out of this guy, just like me. Do I care if we have, like, a 45 share in men and we're number one with four bullets, you know, after all these years? What have I got left to prove? Right?
Whatever you said.
And George, you think George? George doesn't care about anything.
Just that money.
Just that money and a little bag every now and then. Little bag.
Or a big one.
1492. Wouldn't Christopher Columbus be proud of us on this show right now, huh? He discovered America like I discovered a cure for Nostrilitis. Nostradamus. Christopher Columbus discovered America. Why do they make up such crap like that?
They do it all the time.
No. What do you think? What do you think our kids are learning about the war in Vietnam?
Nothing.
What did you learn? I mean, you weren't in school that long ago, Josh. What do they teach you about the war in Vietnam?
That we won.
Oh, really? All right.
Yeah.
Woo! 1256. You ought to be working across the street when the ratings come out. Hey, look at that. We're number one. We won. Yeah.
Hello. This is Arnold. This is not a tumor. It's the 1 to 2 hour.
A shower, you put on the talcum powder, you wear tuxedos with the flowers, you wear her pink pantyhose, you put your jock on her ear instead, she puts a negligee on your head, you wear her bra with some diapers, give to her your BBBs. Na 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 na. Let's all sneak a peek, the bunny games people play. Na 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 na. Let's all sneak a peek, the bunny games people play.
It's 101 at 560. I told you I was going to be playing a lot of stuff that I haven't played in ages. I didn't say it was going to be good stuff, but...
Oh, like that one?
Hey, what was wrong with that? Are you starting to be like anti-Jamaican now, man?
No, not at all. Just you know.
Help you find a good machine, man, and jump into it. Oh, you hear that? I got to shove some more paper in there.
Better do it.
Let's see. 1502 on the pool. We can make 1600 this hour. We can get to 16 by 2 o'clock. If we don't get to 1600 by 2 o'clock, I'll feel like we're like losing it. Like Tom Cruise and what's his name? John Stockwell. Forget about Tom Cruise. What?
Easily done.
Bob Geiger writes on the Smirkling Chimp. Well, I sure hope this all printed out before that thing ran out of paper. No, it's fine. Short and sweet and to the point. I don't want to sit here and read a lot of long political stuff. That's what's going to kill this show if I keep doing that. The election's over, Neil. Oh, you're right. In fact, I should be reading only stuff from TMZ.com.
There you go.
Yeah, celebrity fluff, don't you think?
Sure.
Got to go out and get the Inquirer again.
About KFED threatening to release that honeymoon video.
Yeah, KFEDX.
Stuff like that.
Oh, boy. Isn't that pathetic? Isn't that sad?
Isn't that typical and predictable?
Yes. Yes, it is. This document failed to print. No, it didn't.
Uh-oh.
You're wrong. How can I say this document failed to print when I got it in my hand right now? I think you're right. Although this isn't Internet Explorer. So, by the way, everybody say goodbye to Explorer and go to a Mozilla Firefox, please.
No,
if you've got any brains. Should have done that a long time ago.
2.0.
Yeah, that's right. I started talking about that one day, and then you interrupted me as usual. The new 2.0 Mozilla Firefox. Download that, baby. It's not a big change from what it was before, but it's, you know, who knows other than what you're seeing visually, it accomplishes that we don't notice. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Only the shadow knows. Bob Geiger says, immediately refuting the campaign lies spewed by Republicans guaranteeing across-the-board tax increases from a Congress controlled by Democrats. Incoming Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, a dead man in a suit, opened the lame duck Senate yesterday by calling for tax relief for middle-class Americans. In what will be one of his last opening statements as Senate Minority Leader, Reid called for the passage of tax breaks for middle-class families and businesses, as well as appropriations bills that include funding for veterans' health care, education, and energy programs. But what does that have to do with Ira Winback? For too long, Americans have watched as Washington has ignored their needs and concentrated on special interests instead, said Reid yesterday on the Senate floor. Families have struggled with high health care costs, only to see big drug companies get billions from Congress. Ranchers in Nevada have struggled to fill their tanks with gas, only to see big oil companies get tax breaks. In the weeks and months ahead, Democrats will focus our energies on the real challenges facing America and take concrete steps to protect the country and help working families get ahead. Reid proposed that the post-election congressional session be used in part to extend critical middle-class and business tax cuts, including the following: deductions for college tuition, deductions for state and local sales taxes, deductions for out-of-pocket expenses incurred by teachers, for business extending the research and development work opportunity and welfare-to-work tax credits, and yada, yada. How do you like that?
Mm-hmm.
Tax cuts for the rich under Bush and the Republicans for wealthy and big business, which is, you know, it's no surprise. You know, they do what they've always done, okay? That's what they're all about. Here's your buddy Ahmadinejad.
This government, we've always said we'll have a dialogue with, but under certain conditions. That
good God.
Ahmadinejad.
She's enough to make you Jones for your girlfriend on there. I saw her yesterday briefly.
Rita.
Lovely Rita. There's Harry Reid. Yeah, there's the dead man in the suit. See, you know the difference between Harry Reid and Greg Reid?
I give up.
One is a dead man in the suit, another one's a brain dead man in the suit. A Los Angeles woman whose son accused pop star Michael Jackson of sexual abuse last year in that sensational trial pleaded no contest to welfare fraud yesterday and has agreed to repay more than $8,600. See the way that they smear and smear that nice lady?
Sure.
She's a lowlife, but nevertheless. Los Angeles Superior Court Judge Barbara Johnson also ordered a 38-year-old woman who's not been named by most news organizations to protect the identity of her son to perform 150 hours of community service. Johnson said the welfare fraud charge will be reduced to a misdemeanor April 27th if the woman performs the community service and pays the restitution by that date. The woman was expected to move to Georgia later this year and was ordered by the judge to enroll in a community service program in Georgia. Maybe Aintree. I don't think so. I don't think they like her kind of Aintree. In California, pleading no contest is the legal equivalent of pleading guilty. At the trial last year, prosecutors charged Jackson with molesting the teenager and conspiring to hold him and his family against their will at his famed Neverland Valley Ranch in Central California. The jury amazingly acquitted the entertainer of all charges in June of 2005. Astonishingly and amazingly. The woman took the witness stand during the trial, testifying that for a time she was forbidden to leave the ranch and was intimidated by Jackson's associates. She refused to testify about the welfare assistance, citing her Fifth Amendment protections against self-incrimination, and jurors said after the trial that her credibility in court factored into their deliberations. Jackson, 47, as we know, has moved out of the country. Neverland remains largely shuttered, and he's living it up, wolfing it up, I'm sure, with lots of little boys in Bahrain. Bahrain. Oh, there's Chip Reid, a real screamer.
A powerful man, no matter what his title is.
Notice how those S's are. Look at that. He reached out and grabbed one. I can't believe it. He reached out right in midair and grabbed one of those runaway S's. Nice going, Chip. You go, girl. 1510, that's WMEX in Boston. 1510. You believe me?
Sure, why not? Why would you lie?
I'm looking at it. Well, I don't remember. It's a long time ago. That's how many votes we got on the poll. We need 90 in 53 minutes. That's not even to a minute. We should be able to do that. WMEX FM, 106.5. There ain't no more WMEX. How do you like them apples, man? All those great stations from the olden days? Let's see. Radio broadcasting history. Radio stations by city in Massachusetts. Oh, God. WBCS. Oh, I got to go all the way to M. WODS. WMAX Boston, but it doesn't say where it was on the dial. Jack Armstrong, Larry Kieringer, Jim Connors, Mark Davis, Dan Donovan, 1, 2, and 3, Jack Gale, Arnie Woo-Woo Ginsburg, Larry Glick. Larry Glick worked at MEX, I can't believe it. Jim Harrington, Bobby Holiday, Johnny Lujack, Melvin X. Melvin. Dick Summer worked there, Charlie Tuna, Rick Williams, and J. Michael Wilson, who was later at Keener in Detroit. WKNR with the Rodney the Road. Remember J. Michael Wilson? Remember those great Keener jingles we had?
Yeah.
Don't got them no more, do I? WKNR. I bet we got them somewhere. Where, how would I find them? They're not in here, I'm sure of that. We got old WIOD jingles, really bad ones. Oh, God. Holy moly. How depressing. Almost as depressing as working there.
W-I-O-D,
Miami. Woo! Brutal. Somebody paid for that. And then there's always this stuff.
Remember this golden gasser.
What the hell was that?
Huh?
Where the hell did that come from? Boy, are you out of control or what? Remember that day Rick Shaw called up and I played a little bit of that for old Ricky Ticky? He won't call no more because I'm not looking at the phone thing. He could call on the bat line, although I guess you never gave it to him.
No, I did not.
Do you guys even answer the bat line if it ever rings? Does it ring?
Well, I wouldn't know this monitor. Josh has yours is off. This one's broken, and Josh's hasn't worked in like 2 years.
So if you're calling us, number one, you're wasting
your time.
No,
I mean, I can see on the actual phone itself.
Oh, I can see. Mine works just fine, but I have it shut off because I don't want to take no calls. I took one before. And, you know, I don't think I'm ever taking another one when you come right down to it. 2 a.m.
Hey, hi, Neil. Hey.
Oh, like I said. I don't want to take these stupid calls. You know? See, I was thinking about this yesterday. And one of the things that the audience loved about some of us on here is ripping. Oh, we like when you rip the calls, but you see, that's run its course. There's no point in that anymore, is there?
No.
What's the point? Because like 9 out of 10 of them are a bunch of bozos anyway. So it's like shooting fish in a barrel. You know, like Dick Cheney on one of his hunting trips, shooting friends in a barrel. What's the point? I mean, anybody who would call a radio talk show, 90, at least 95% have got to be...
I have no line.
Yeah, some kind of a problem. Some kind of a serious problem. And as soon as I talk about doing this, now I better reach over and shut it off again.
Lest you can't be tempted.
That. No, I'm not the least bit tempted. I punched that one up, even though I saw there was somebody on there, to see if it added something to my to the show, to my existence. And it was, the guy, I'm not knocking the guy, he seemed like a real caller, you know. That was the problem. He seemed like a real caller. Everything goes through phases, you know, this business especially, but everything. Things change. And if you want to do the same old tried and true, it's like some people that try to tell me, a talk show, how can you have a talk show with no phone calls? Because I'm talking. We're sitting here talking for 4 hours. Who says that a radio talk show has got to have stupid-ass phone calls or even smart-ass phone calls, which is mostly what we get, smart-ass. Am I right?
No
who
question.
Defines?
Absolutely.
Who did Mo? You know, things change. You got to, you know, move on. Just like that day I told you when I was going to have Madeline O'Hare on the phone as a guest for the 8 minute time on INZ, and I thought, I'm tired of this already. And if I'm tired, the audience must be ready to plots from it. You know, and I told the producer, whoever it was back then, I said, call her up and tell her the dog peed on the carpet. We had some kind of something came up, and we'll talk to her again someday, which we never did. And then before you know it, she was dead.
Huh?
Somebody sliced her and the kids up. Well, you know who it was. That guy wanted all that money, half a million.
That's right.
Schlepped them around to the ATMs, made them take all their money out, and then sliced them to ribbons and buried them in the yard somewhere. Poor Madeline. I guess that'll teach her to, like, not accept the Lord, huh? That'll teach her a thing or two or three.
In a position, they recognize that a single unified position would be best for them politically. There just isn't an easy...
Can I ask you this? Seriously, are there any straight people left at all? I mean, I just don't get it. All these reporters on TV, they all look really
gay.
Swishy as hell. Now the Republican Party, the closet... Now that the closet door is open up so wide, they're a bunch of screamers. Screamers! So, speaking of screaming, let me just ask you this one last time about Chris Jones, because I know the answer is going to be he just ignored me. No, seriously, what kind of a sales manager when we're dealing with issues about things, business? We're not talking personal here. We're talking business, and just ignores the situation. Maybe inept comes to mind. Inept, incompetent, idiotic, pathetic, sad.
The big names, the best talent. It's the Kenny and Bo Morning Show. Weekday 7 to 10. Sports Radio 560 QAM.
Greg hates you.
Jesus Christ, movie star. Are you as Mel Gibson says you are?
Mel Gibson used to be the star of Lethal Weapon. People in the theaters are bound to ask. It was okay, but was it as good as Mad Max?
Jesus Christ, movie star. Rex Reed and the Pope giving you four stars.
You failed.
Jesus Christ, take a look. Don't see the film till you read the book. Jesus Christ, on the screen.
It is as it was, baby. That's what El Papa said before we croaked, before they dragged the slob on the slab all around with his red shoes. This Pope also wears red shoes, but much snappier than the other one.
Really? Maybe
they're
going to
have the Red Shoe Diaries coming out of the Vatican.
I wouldn't doubt it.
I'd sure love to read that book.
Would you?
117 at 560 WQAM. Here's a fax from Frank in Melbourne who says, you're correct, WMAX was at 1510. Arnie Ginsberg used to say, WMAX color radio.
What?
He had a horn he used to toot.
Toot, toot.
Arnie, toot, toot. Woo-woo Ginsberg. That was where the woo-woo came from.
I see.
I still jones in for that Adventure Car Hop in Saugus, Mass. He owned that place, I believe, Arnie Ginsberg's Adventure Car Hop. Just like the old A&Ws, you know, where the chicks would come out on the roller skates right up to your window, you know, and you pull off. Only better food. I'm not saying A&W was bad. You know, we have A&W here.
Do you?
Yeah. Aren't you excited about that?
How is it?
It's just like it always was. You know, they got the Mama Burger and the Papa Burger and the Teen Burger and Bubba Burger and the Bubba Mices. Well, you got me all whipped up about pizza now.
Yep.
That's really bad.
Uh-huh,
well,
yeah.
And nothing I can do about it. I could probably go and get one of them in the store, you know, one of them frozen. Probably be better than the stuff you're talking about, how bad it is.
Right. What's that kind? DiGiorno, Josh, who endorses
it? Well, DiGiorno, the one where you put your face up against the stove and you get that the marks on your head?
Yes.
Because it's got the slow-rising crust. I can't eat that. It would send my blood sugar rising up to 700, and I would croak. And then you'd probably take over the show until they put some stupid sports show on there.
Or some tapes.
Did I really hear this morning that they're going to have Drew Rosenhaus on every Wednesday?
Well, I didn't hear it because I'm not listening.
Hey, Kenny, you're a wimp. You're a good guy, Kenny, but you're a real wimp. Just like they said in The Godfather, you know.
You can act like a man!
That's right. Slap Clarence in the face and say, you idiot, you quizzling, you're killing our show with all these stupid segments. With these, they got so many regular. They're only on for 3 freaking hours, for crying out loud, from 7 to 10. How many segments do you have to have in there, prefabricated, where it's already farmed out to some goofball? And I guarantee the station's paying these jackasses, too. You think that Drew Rosenhaus is coming in every Wednesday for free just because he's got a big ego? And he's like, what's his name, the lawyer, Kendall Coffey. Never met a microphone he didn't like. Or a camera. Democrats choose Senate leadership, and I think this is the last political story for a while. They don't care about the politics. It's all over now. The election's over, Neil. Oh, sorry. It was like a week ago today, right?
Okay.
Senator Harry Reid, dead man in a suit, will continue to lead this party in the Senate of the next term, our story has learned. Senate Democrats, now the majority party, today voted for a leadership post within the legislative body. The group also named Senator Robert Byrd, who just turned 200 years old, as a president pro tem, and Dick Durbin, former minority whip, as assistant majority leader. Barbara Boxer of California will be chief deputy whip, leading deputy whips Thomas Carper, Bill Nelson, and Russ Feingold. On Thursday, Democrats in the House will meet to choose their new leaders, with most eyes on the race for majority leader. Soon to be House Speaker, Nancy Pelosi has endorsed Representative John Murtha, even though Congressman Steny Hoyer is in line for the position, and the two Democrats have been lobbying for support from their colleagues. It's a battle. It's a fight. And Murtha will get it. He should get it.
Yes.
1535 on that poll. We're creeping towards 16. I don't think we're capable of doing 1600 during the show, are we?
Why not?
I don't know. I just made that up to make it seem like if we do get there, a phenomenal accomplishment, and if we don't, like, oh, they never had a chance anyway, 1600. 1535, though, is pretty heavy, hefty duty, isn't it? You don't think?
Yeah.
I think what I could do is probably I could be on a plane by 3 or 4 this afternoon and fly to New York and take a cab right down there to Manhattan and get some of that great new authentic New York pizza and then come back late tonight. Or I could hop on a plane, one of them little puddle jumpers, and fly right across the lake and go to Rochester where they got really good pizza. You want to know why? Because it's like real Italians who make the pizza in the restaurants there. Doesn't that make a difference? You heard what Josh said before about that place in Coral Springs. Real Italians are cooking up the stuff. Not a bunch of, Jews pretending to be Italians. Stuff like that. You know what I mean?
No. What do you mean?
A sanitation worker who found $1,900 attached to a discarded desk at a city scrap heap says he's followed the rules and now deserves the money, but the city won't give it up. This is in Neenah, Wisconsin. You ever hear of Neenah, Menasha, Wisconsin, the Twin Cities?
No.
You did now. Neenah, Menasha. You know how many people live in both cities put together?
About 30, man.
It's been very hard on me for being honest and then being told that because you're honest, we're going to pat you on the back and take your money, David Voigt said in a telephone interview the other night. Voigt, 52, found the cash in July in envelopes attached by magnets to the underside of the metal desk at a junk drop-off site at the city garage. Envelopes attached by magnets. Voigt, a longtime street and sanitation worker for Neenah, turned the money over to the police and waited for somebody to claim it within 90 days. What an idiot.
I know.
If you found $1,900 in a trash situation like that, you'd turn it over to the police?
No.
I really wanted it to go to the rightful person, Voigt said. It didn't matter to me. It wasn't mine to begin with. But it kind of rubbed me the wrong way that all of a sudden the council said, since it was found on city property, you can't have it, mister. You can't have it. Now that the 90 days are up and no one claimed the money, city officials have been wrangling over what to do with it. I can tell them where to stick it.
Rectum.
$1,900. Isn't that pathetic?
Yes, it is.
It goes to show you, try to be an honest, upstanding citizen, and they slap you right in the ass and in the face. That's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no reward for honesty. I mean, well, I guess once in a while, if you find like a rich person, lost a lot of money, and you return it, and if they were in a generous mood at that moment, they might give you a really nice reward. But what would you rather have, all of the money or the reward, If you found $50,000, would you rather have like a $1,000 reward or the $50,000 in cash?
Oh,
unmarked bills.
Let me think about that while I spend the money.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sitting here preaching that people should be dishonest, but if you happen to find something that's like got no name on it, it's one thing if you find somebody's wallet that's got all kinds of ID and stuff like that. I mean, what I would do is, clean the money out and just return the wallet. It's got a lot of important stuff in there.
It had Ben Franklin's name on it, and I know he's dead, so I'm just going to keep it.
That's exactly. He ain't going to do nothing with it no more. He can't even go out and fly the kite no more. Crying out loud. 1541. We have 37 minutes for 59 votes. This is going to be a real... See, it goes to show you. It's just one of those days. It's kind of murky and depressing here, to be honest with you. It's not really pleasant. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's murky. Write that down, Castronova. By the way, George tells me Castronova is going to get blown off the map now with that new show.
So, yeah, that's what I said.
So it's 45 and murky. It's not raining or anything. It's just murky and so it's not a really uplifting day. But if we could get out of the blue, to 1,600 votes on the poll while we're still on the air, I guarantee you that's going to be on the front page of the Weekly Reader tomorrow. Then in between telling kids about how great U.S. did in Vietnam and how nobody got killed, that Neil Rogers had 1,600 votes during the show on a stupid-ass poll about phonies, phony baloney. Speaking of phony baloney, President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. Oh, wait a minute. One moment, please.
My husband totaled our new SUV on my birthday.
But I still love him.
Anyway, President Mahmoud, I don't like this spot all that much,
Why not?
Well, compared to the Vern Troyer one and the one with the announcer guy, this one's a little weak.
A little dry.
I was one lucky woman.
It's cute. It's cute. President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad on Tuesday said Iran would soon celebrate completion of its controversial nuclear fuel program. He said, I ain't no fuel. With the wisdom and resistance of the nation today, our position is stabilized. I'm very hopeful that we'll be able to hold a big celebration of Iran's full nuclearization in the current year, the hardline president told reporters during a press conference. Iran's current calendar year ends on March 20th, whatever that means. More religious crap. The hardline president also claimed that international community was caving into Tehran's demand for a nuclear program. He didn't elaborate. And, drawing a direct analogy between Iran and Nazi Germany, Likud leader Benjamin Netanyahu, Benjamin Netanyahu, a real BB brain if there ever was one, asserted yesterday that the Iranian nuclear program posed a threat not only to Israel, but the entire Western world.
Oy.
There was still time, however, to prevent Tehran from acquiring nuclear weapons, he said. It's 1938, and Iran is Germany. And Iran is racing to arm itself with atomic bombs, Netanyahu told delegates to the annual United Jewish Communities General Assembly, repeating the line several times like a chorus during his address. Believe him and stop him, he said of Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. This is what we must do. Everything else pales before this, he'd be saying. While the Iranian president denies the Holocaust, Netanyahu said, he's preparing another Holocaust for the Jewish state. Bada-beep, bada-boop, bada-bop. How do you like that? BB brain. He's just looking for an opening, man. He's looking for an opening so they can go in there and nuke him. Fry him. Or maybe just drop 200,000 or 300,000 in nice cluster bombs like they did in Lesbianon. And by the way, you lesbianese out there, don't start getting too comfortable.
Why not?
They got their eyes, they got their mind set on you again, like that song by George Harrison. 1,547 votes on the poll. We need 53 in 34 minutes. That is a doable number, man, if everybody goes out there and votes 2-3 times extra. You think?
No.
You think Joe Bell's going to come running in there at 2 o'clock saying, 1,600 votes on the poll. You people must have an audience out there. We'll say, no, we don't. We used to.
No.
It used to before you came in. 27 past 1. By the way, a lot of people are going to the Christmas party this year because you won't be there, Greg. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, he will.
Attention. I beg your pardon?
I'm sure he will.
Like I said, anybody planning to go to the QAM Christmas party, forget about it. Greg will be there.
If there's a but, I smell it now. How the Clintons spent their first night in Chappaqua.
I'll get it, honey. No, I'll get it. Don't worry about it. Just relax.
I'm coming. Hi there.
Well, hello, Mr. President. I'm Sarah Rubin.
Yes, you are.
Yes, my family lives in that Victorian house across the street.
It's a very nice house, and you have very nice legs.
Well, thank you, sir. And welcome to our little town of Chappaqua. Hope your family will enjoy living here.
I think I will.
My daughter, Amanda, and I have baked you this little welcome to the neighborhood. It's our family recipe for pineapple upside-down cake.
I'd like to take your pineapples anyway, upside-down, sideways.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Oh, bye-bye, then.
No, it was just a lady from next door. That's all. I said I'll get it. Just sit down and shut up, will you please?
Now, there are boxes all over the place. I can't believe it. Well, hello.
Hello, Mr. Clinton. I'm Elaine Kripkin.
Keep your voice down. Are you the escort?
No, sir.
I'm sorry, Miss Crickets. What can I do you for?
Well, I just wanted to welcome you to the neighborhood.
Well, the escort's not here yet, so if you want to jump on old Charlie.
No, sir.
All right, well, I'll see you later, Eileen. Whatever your name is.
No, it's just another neighbor. You gonna make some food or what? Oh, sweet Jesus.
Jeez, the doorbell's going crazy.
I'll get it.
Great Caesar's ghost.
Hi, Billy. It's me, Monica.
Good God almighty.
What do you think of my new bond?
What are you doing here?
Well, I bought that house next door with my Jenny Craig money.
Oh, my God.
We'll be seeing a lot of each other in the year 2000.
No!
Yes, 1,565 votes, 134, 26 minutes for 35 votes. That's just barely more than 1 minute. We can do that easy, you think?
Yes, you can.
We can do that just as easy as eating pizza pie. Mm.
You can do it!
Judith Miller, former New York Times investigative reporter who went to jail to protect a confidential source, said the balance between national security and civil liberties has been tipped, allowing the Bush administration to become secretive about its decisions, intrusive into public lives, and reluctant to share information the public has a right to know. Miller said many Americans don't understand how their access to information and the freedom of the press have been affected in the past 2 years. We are less free and less safe, she said, explaining that there's a growing secrecy in the name of national security. Miller, who spent 85 days in jail for refusing to reveal a source in the Valerie Plame case, spoke Friday morning at Kansas State University as part of the Community Readiness Communications Accurate Messages in Times of Crisis Conference. What a name. Plame was a CIA agent. Well, we know about that. Miller said, no one can deny lives haven't changed since 9/11 and that national security is a concern, but the federal government has used that fear to justify eavesdropping on phone conversations and tapping into emails without warrants and classifying information that was once available to the public. More than 15 million documents were classified last year, she said, explaining that translates into 125 documents a minute. It's intimidation by classification. And American citizens are paying for it, she said, to the tune of $7.2 billion in fiscal year 2004 alone. How can electorate be free and informed if it's denied information, Miller asked? Without a free press, such stories as the torture of prisoners at Iraq's
Abu Ghraib
prison, warrantless wiretapping in CIA prisons in Eastern Europe, would never have been reported, she'd be saying. People need to know what the government is doing in order to debate, she said. Miller said the American media, however, give the federal government reason to doubt its motives and competence each time it's discovered that an article is plagiarized or gossip is reported as fact. The blurring of entertainment and news and the relaxing of journalistic standards can be seen in online bloggers who are critical of people without giving them a chance to respond or don't post corrections when they learn that what they posted is wrong, she said. I'm worried about bloggers, she said. A post starts as a rumor. Within 24 hours, it's repeated as fact. While she advocates a federal shield law to protect mainstream journalists from divulging their sources, she doesn't favor extending that to bloggers who don't follow the standards and ethics of the journalism industry. The standards and ethics of the journalism industry, wow. Still, she wouldn't restrict the blogger's right to publish online. She said some bloggers have been invaluable in uncovering government flaws. I'm glad to welcome them as long as they agree to the standards, she be saying. Well, Ned Darn, whatever. Judith Miller, back to jail, bitch.
I like it.
Good, I'm glad for you. 1,570 votes on there. We need only 30 more, and we got 24 minutes. And again, you know, as we get closer to 2 o'clock, the ratio is, like, dropping down. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Pretty soon we'll only need, like, one a minute. One a minute. And if we had 1,600 people listening and they all voted, we'd have 1,600 votes. But we don't. Who's the biggest phony of them all? Rush Limbaugh, 614. He's got damn near 40%. He's got 39. That time of the year, you know, where the allergies start acting up?
Yeah, it is.
Huh?
Yes, it is.
Is it really? I thought that was in the spring.
It's every time of year down here.
Oh, nasty. Now, what was I just doing? Oh, Rush Limbaugh, 614, 39%. Reverend Ted Haggard, 241. He likes to get a body rub, or at least part of his body. Bill O'Reilly, 181. He's still breathing heavy. Dr. Phil, 173. That's nip and tuck, man. That's tight, really tight. Tight as a hangman's noose. Oprah, 90. Look at that. Dr. Phil is way ahead of her as far as the phony list. That's really something. She invented him.
Mm-hmm.
Fat-ass Jeb Bush has got 84. Dog the Bounty Hunter, 42. Rip-snorting kind of a guy. Mark Foley, she's up to 42 now. Climbing up there slowly but surely. He said, don't call me Shirley. Jesse Jackson, 40. I hate this poll. Only a mere 36. 2.2% again. We're stuck on that 2.2. So two of them together, maybe the humper over to the holiday party. Jill Lieberman's got 20, and Nancy Grace, she's still in last place. She's got 10, Fran. So we got more friends on our MySpace than that bitch?
Well, yeah.
Wow. That is impressive. I mean, the 1,577 votes we got on the poll, that's moderately impressive, because it's a very negatory thing, you know. Just taking a cheap shot at people, which we certainly never would do on this show. Just giving the audience a chance to take a cheap shot and be mean-spirited and hostile to some nasty, hostile bastard or old bitch like Oprah. I know they're saying, well, you're just jealous of all her money. I'd like to have her money, make no mistake about it. I sure wouldn't trade bodies. I mean, as bad as this fat old pathetic body is, I wouldn't trade bodies with that bitch. That's
even,
sour.
Even if you had a talking butt?
Oh, I forgot about that butt, now that you mentioned it. Oh, I still haven't watched American Dad. Now, is there, like, more than one episode on that disc?
No, it's just the one, but if you like it, many of them are very funny. But
really?
That one in particular is about gay Republicans, so I thought you'd get a chuckle, a snicker.
Republicans?
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't think there was any such animal.
Well,
anyway, I got a plan now. What I'm going to do is get me a pizza and just eat the toppings, and I'll watch American Dad while I'm eating on that
toppings. How's that sound? The best talent. This is Neil Rogers, Sports Radio 560 QAM.
How about that, Mike?
Women adore him. His lust is unquenchable. His animal magnetism knows no bounds. He's a man. He's a beast. He's Bullwinkle.
Oh, Bullwinkle.
Are you okay, dearie?
Oh, Bullwinkle.
Dear, are you having an asthma attack?
you are. Somebody call an ambulance. Oh, Dirty, no, take a seat this now.
Yes, that's right. You can talk dirty to Bullwinkle, too. Have the moose with antlers satisfy your every beastial desire.
Don't stop. I'm almost there.
You're almost here? Boy, if I knew you were coming, I'd have baked a cake.
Bullwinkle, make me scream.
Well, okay. Your credit cards have been revoked.
Yes, talk dirty to Bullwinkle. Call 1-900-MOOSE-ME. $2 the first minute, $6 each additional minute. The moose is waiting to talk to you.
Speaking of that, I think I got the moose in the last break.
1-900-MOOSE-ME right now.
I thought it was that the rejoin, that Hank rejoin, that long ponderous thing. I thought we were done with those.
Well, see, I only have two short ones, and I've been playing them all day, so I figured...
No.
I don't have to play an eye.
Josh sandbagging you for threatening to take those stories off the
That's what
the,
I was doing. Site.
Everyone's talking about Emmitt Smith these days, but they're not talking about the NFL career-leading rusher. The chatter is about how Smith's hip swing and smooth glides on the dance floor have gotten him to this week's finale on the ABC celebrity show. What is it called?
I give up.
Well, this thing is chopped off on the end. Dancing with the Stars.
Oh.
And anybody who watches that show, we don't want to know you. I think he's just fabulous. Ann Williams, 69, founder of the Dallas Black Dance Theater, told Dallas Morning News. There's no doubt many will be watching the showdown between Smith and partner Cheryl Burke and actor Mario Lopez and Karina something or other. Dance studios throughout North Texas have held Emmitt watching parties. The show has appealed cut across, it's cut across culture and class lines. Dancing with the Stars, my ass. And as far as Mario Lopez is concerned, oh, God, who are you kidding? You know that one from Saved by the Bell or whatever the hell that was and Go to Hell and Don't Rape That Girl, whatever that was all about?
No.
You know Mario Lopez.
No.
Okay. I don't, if it's chopped off. I know if I would take the time. Look, if I took the time that you want me to like highlight all the stuff that I want to print out, I'd have to. I wouldn't be able to sleep.
Listen, taking time. Who's the laziest person you know?
You.
There you go.
1,600 votes on the poll. See, that's all I care about. I don't want to hear any instructions, okay? I'm real happy the way it is.
Old dog.
It's fun when it's chopped off. In addition to which, I got news for you. How many old farts like me, my age, are as computer literate and...
None. None. That doesn't mean that you have to keep doing things the hard way.
I like doing them the hard way.
I know. I've heard.
I don't think that'll last very long, but nevertheless. For evangelicals, supporting Israel is God's foreign policy. This is a long article. I don't have time to read the whole thing, and you ought to be real happy about that. 766 friends on MySpace on our page on there. We got 1,600 votes on the poll. Holy moly. There's your girlfriend, Hillary.
Oh, I am going to relish this victory.
She said she's going to put relish on it. And Bubba said don't even think about it. As Israeli bombs fell on Lesbian for a second week last July, the Reverend John Hagee of San Antonio arrived in Washington with 3,500 evangelicals for the first annual conference of his newly founded organization, Christians United for Israel. At a dinner addressed by the Israeli ambassador, a handful of Republican senators, and the chairman of the Republican Party, Mr. Hagee read greetings from President Bush and Prime Minister Ehud Olmert of Israel and dispatched the crowd with a message for their representatives in Congress. Tell them to let Israel do their job of destroying the Lebanese militia Hezbollah, Mr. Hagee said. He called the conflict a battle between good and evil and said support for Israel was God's foreign policy. Oh, my God. The next day, he took the same message to the White House. Many conservative Christians say they believe that the president's support for Israel fulfills a biblical injunction to protect the Jewish state, which some of them think will play a pivotal role in the Second Coming. Many on the left, in turn, fear that such theology may influence the decisions the administration makes toward Israel and the Middle East. That's why things are going so well over there right now, by the way. That's why the roadmap is doing so well. Remember that roadmap they kept talking about?
Mm-hmm.
And the quartet and the quintet and the Sammy Davis trio? Administration officials say that the meeting with Mr. Hagee was a courtesy for a political ally and that evangelical theology has no effect on policymaking. Anybody buying that one?
No.
No.
But the Alliance of Israel, its evangelical Christian supporters, and President Bushmeister has never been closer or more potent. In the wake of the civil war in southern Lebanon, reports that Hezbollah's sponsor, Iran, may be pushing for nuclear weapons, have galvanized conservative Christian support for Israel into a political force that will be hard to ignore. Look out for crazy people like Netanyahu and Ahmadinejad and Bush, all these crazy people, religious nuts. For one thing, white evangelicals make up about a quarter of the electorate. Whatever strains may be creeping into the Israeli-American lines over Iraq, the Palestinians, and Iran, a large part of the Republican Party's base remains committed to a fiercely pro-Israel agenda that seems likely to have an effect on policy choices. Mr. Hagee says his message for the White House was, every time there's been a fight like this over the last 50 years, the State Department would send someone over in a jet to call for a ceasefire. The terrorists would rest, rearm, and retaliate. He added, appeasement has never helped the Jewish people. I'll tell you one thing, man. They sure did a wonderful job there in Lisbon. Didn't they accomplish a lot?
Sure.
Sure killed a lot of innocent people and left a lot of them cluster of bombs.
A lot of kids.
This time, Elliot Abrams, the White House Deputy National Security Advisor, who met with him, essentially agreed, Mr. Hagee said. Leaving the White House offices, we felt we were on the right track, he'd be saying. Now, in tandem with the Israeli government, many evangelical Christians have focused on a new villain, the Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad.
Ahmadinejad.
Evangelical broadcasters and commentators have seized on Mr. Ahmadinejad's comments questioning the Holocaust and calling for the abolition of the Israeli state. And many evangelicals now talk of the Iranian leader as a mortal threat to Israel. Some evangelical leaders say they're wary of reports that a panel, including former Secretary of State James Baker III, might recommend negotiating with Iran about the future of Iraq. It certainly bothers me, said the obnoxious, unctuous lunatic Dr. James C. Dobson, founder of Hocus Pocus, Focus on the Family, one of the most influential conservative Christians. That has the same kind of feel to it as the British negotiating with Germany, Italy, and Japan in the run-up to WWII. Neville Chamberlain's alive and well is what he's trying to say. What about Richard Chamberlain?
You fair.
Dr. Kildare.
Mm-hmm.
See, they're trying to be a killjoy for Dr. Kildare. Like you were fooling somebody all along, Richard Chamberlain. Remember he came out of the closet here a year or two ago?
Yeah.
Like anybody with an eye, one eye would know he was
gay.
Come on.
Richard Chambermaid.
That's the one. That's her. 1,607 votes on the poll. This is a banner day. A banner day. In honor of this, what do we do now? Take the rest of the week off? Sounds like a winner to me. Give me the whole day tomorrow to find a good machine mount instead of just the afternoon, evening, and overnight hours. 1,607. Who is the biggest phony of them all? Rush Limbaugh, 639. Let's put Drew Rosenhaus on there, too. He really frosts my ass. Isn't he reviled by just about everybody, Josh? Didn't people hate him like poison?
Yes, he's a turd.
He is a real turd and a real media hound, man. He just, like I said, never met a camera or microphone he didn't love. I'd rather have Seth Greenberg on. I don't even know who the hell he is. What do you say? Let's have some segments on this show. Like I said, they're not reading the bedtime stories because the election's over now and they need a rest. They don't want all this heavy-duty, serious political, you know, they want a little levity now, man. So let's have some segments.
Sure. What do you got in mind?
Like maybe Heine Mnuchin on Mondays?
We'll set it up.
Anasha Skolnick on Tuesday, Myron Cohen on Wednesday, Henny Youngman on Thursday, and
what about Moishe Popik?
And what's his name?
A.B. Ishkabibble?
No, from The Godfather. What the hell was that drop-in I've got?
I don't know.
Can't even think of his name now. I had a brain fart.
Mo Green?
Not Mo Green, the Jewish comedian from Miami Beach.
Oh, Jackie Mason.
Jackie Mason. What the hell is wrong with you, man?
Drugs.
That must be it. Well, I don't have any excuse.
On the streets of heavily Jewish Miami Beach, Lansky became an elder statesman, a living legend.
The most pious Jews in the world in Miami Beach were the holiest people to whom God is everything. Even God wasn't close to Meyer Lansky. As soon as they saw Meyer Lansky, forget about God, this was God. They used to worship him, follow him, look at him. If he walked down the street, they would talk about how slow he walked, how fast, did he have a dog, a cow, a horse, did he sit down, get up, what time.
One time we're in this little deli down in Miami Beach, and these two young boys came up with yarmulkes on, and they were kind of looking at my grandpa, and I was kind of standing in the background, and they came up and said, Mr. Lansky, we'd like to get your autograph. And he kind of looks at him seriously. No, my grandpa, he goes, what did I do, an Academy Award? And he said, well, we figured it'll be worth some money someday, Mr. Lansky. And he said, no, son, I don't sign autographs.
The biggest names, the best talent. This is Neil Rogers, Sports Radio 560 QAM.
Neil God.
This is Dan Rather, former CBS Evening News anchorman, and now a punchline. My former network's inability to find a suitable replacement for me demonstrates my true genius and complete and total domination as an on-the-air talking head. But let us speak about some of the names who have been mentioned to replace me. First, Bob Schieffer. Nice enough man, but please, he's got less hair than Madonna's armpits. And everyone knows you can't conduct a train if you use Rogaine. Another name that has been bandied about is John Roberts, who currently anchors the Sunday CBS Evening News. There's a reason he's been on Sundays for so long. Plus, he's Canadian. And everyone knows when the camera light goes red, it can't be a hose head. Then there's Scott Pelley from 60 Minutes. He was the guy who helped me make up the story about President Bush, I think. Plus, he's skinnier than Kelly Ripa. And everyone knows you have to have a meaty can if you want to be the man. And let's go from the ridiculous to the sublime. The front runner to succeed me seems to be current Today Show co-anchor Katie Couric. When I first heard her name in the same sentence as mine, I threw up in my mouth a little bit. This person thinks real news is announcing the individual weight of each of J-Lo's butt cheeks. Plus, her head's too small, her eyes are too close together, and she reeks of Gina Tay. When charged with the awesome task of replacing an icon, it's important to remember, you can't. You can only hope to find someone who isn't bald, Canadian, skinny, or so completely self-centered she thinks her name should be part of the Pledge of Allegiance. For now, this is Dan Rather signing off and reminding you, a whistle is to blow, a gong is to bang, and Katie Couric has about as much to offer the world as a frog with pins in its extremities laying on a high school lab table. This is Dan Rather.
Bye, bye, bye!